you know, I just know that we need to go ahead and do something.
Is there a loophole in this? Is it?
Or if we have to collect the money and pay for it, you know, I don't mind doing that. I just think
city employees
that we need to
banding
do it.
Together to do something.
You know, we as city employees have band together to do several different things when there's a need. Let's say a house burns down or something like this, we all band together and collect things and do things. This is the first request that I'm aware of, at least in the last 8 years that I've been city manager, where we had a request from an employee to use a facility like that. I think it certainly is worthy of it. The only caution that I would have is that I need to be prepared that if somebody else asks me the same thing for a benefit, that we all acknowledge, you know, what I can or cannot do.
Well, that's one reason I did not bring it to you, so you wouldn't have that burden. You know, you didn't have to make that decision.
Well, let me just give just a little bit of history on the facility down there. At one time, when the facility was first opened up, we had a fairly liberal policy on letting people use the facility. If there's any nonprofit in the community, if there is any even slight association with the city of Aiken, we gave it to them for no cost. Yet we had some pretty major expenses in upkeep and janitorial and on and on. So then the decision was finally made that unless the city was a co-sponsor of an event down there, we didn't give it to free to anybody. Now we'll give a discount to a nonprofit, and occasionally I get hit in a really weak moment and we'll go down to what, 150, I think, at times, if it's something that just really needs to be done for our community. Or like last year, we brought up and said the one table was something that was the entire community where the city wanted to be involved. And so the last 2 years we've opened it up, and last year it wasn't used very much, but this year several people ate down there just because of the size of the crowd. So we have been careful. I see somewhat of a difference in the fact that this is one of ours. You know, this is an employee of the city who has been with the city for a long time, but to me it doesn't really make a difference whether he's been here for 30 years or 10 years or 5 years. There's a very need in their community, and as Beverly said, it's sometimes not even the money, it's just the show of support.
He doesn't even know anything about it.
And so even if I had to contribute the money to pay for the hall downstairs, I think it's something we should do. And
we have discretionary funds. Can we just not agree to?
Well, it's not like.
I just think we just need to charge.
It's not like you lose money.
I think we ought to do it personally. If we're willing to contribute enough.
How much?
$150
total.
Or what?
What would be a fair price?
Because this is opening a door that you're going to have all kinds of folks and situations coming in once they get wind of this.
Well, we're not going to publicize it. You know,
I personally don't think you're going to get that many requests. I mean, we don't have a lot of benefits that we're trying to do with employees or other things. But I mean, if we start getting some other ones, we could bring them on a case-by-case basis to city council.
Well, that's my suggestion. Just make it a case-by-case situation. Hopefully, we'll never see another thing
like
this.
Okay.
James 4th chapter talks about doing the right thing under circumstances, and this is, so as I read that scripture yesterday, and in this case, this is the time for us to do the right thing without even going through all this. It's the right thing to do. Let's do it.
And don't forever remember that this was special to us for them.
Yeah.
And
well, I think either way,
I think we could all go in our pockets and write a check and pay for the place, but it's a symbolic gesture for an employee who has a need that we could show our support in a special kind of way.
I understand that clearly.
Yeah.
But we
But after...
The same thing if we contributed some money for it. I just see once the word gets out among our employees...
You're not going to have that problem.
Okay, fine. I don't think you...
Now, I'll have to say that if Donna would have come to me with this situation earlier today, my suggestion would have been, I think council needs to approve it.
Well, that's why I'm here.
And so if it comes up again, I'd probably bring it back to city council.
Exactly. And we want to donate to the money-raising thing. I mean, frankly, I'd rather donate money to that than the city.
Well, if we can just do this, well, I mean, we haven't got everything together yet. That's all I want tonight is...
I so move that we do this.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor?
You voted last year on the one table, by the way. You voted on the one table to allow that.
Okay, it passes unanimously. But
okay, thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay.
Meeting's over.
I couldn't bear to read it.
Is everyone over here?
I can't read it, and
speaking of city cooperation,
I got this picture.
And welcome to our November 27th Aiken City Council work session. And we appreciate everyone being here, and we're really pleased to hear about these two projects that we have on our work session. Thank you all ahead of time for what you've done already, and we're anxious to learn more about it. We have two items, the Pavilion Bandshell/Bandshell at Hopeland Gardens, and space needs for the City Hall employees, City of Aiken. So without further ado, Mr. LeDuc, would you like to take over, sir?
Yes, sir. It's kind of unusual. We have three architects here tonight presenting. So this is really quite a treat for us. Cam, you'll get a little critiquing maybe from the other architects while you're here. Tonight, the first thing we'd like to talk about is the Pavilion/Bandshell. Now, that's kind of a large word there, and you may wonder why we have it word the way it is, and that's because of myself. Kind of go back in a little bit of the history. Last time, the Friends of Hopeland's subcommittee for the Bandshell was here and talked to you and showed you some drawings as to where they thought they were kind of going. After getting an acoustical engineer who wrote the book, Professor Egan out of Clemson, to look at this and looking at the scale of what the Bandshell, the covering, would look like in relationship to the building that was there, it was a tremendous building. But it was felt that based on the configuration of what was going to be placed there, the size of the audience, the shape of the amphitheater, that the shell portion really wasn't necessary. And then when you looked at the scale of it, there was decided not to go forward with that. So after a lot of discussion, talking to the various groups that use Hopeland's Garden stage and the performances that are put on there, a new drawing is coming before you tonight. Everybody is really happy with it. I call it the Pavilion/Bandshell because it still has certain elements of a bandshell. And also, if you look at the 1 cent sales tax, we called it a bandshell. And for that reason, it's going to be the Pavilion/Bandshell so that we could continue to use the funding that we have from the 1 cent sales tax. Because the 1 cent sales tax was described removing that building, putting up a new building, and it would be for the acoustics and bandshell purposes. Saying all that, there's a committee here tonight. Beth Newbern has headed up that committee, and I don't know if you want to. Marshall is here tonight with Beth and others with the committee. And you want to introduce Cam, Marshall, or you want Cam to just come up here? Just have Cam come up here. Cam, you want to come up and present the... And we all have drawings here, Cam, of what it's going to look like that you've given to me.
Do you want the board out middle right here? Okay. So you do have 8.5 by 11, so I'll just present right here. That's okay. Like Roger said, we are simply redoing the existing support facilities for the Rolling Windham Performing Arts Stage. Currently, the existing building is situated right in this location, right in here. We are proposing a new building, tear down the old building, and build a new support facility. We're going to extend back approximately 10 feet back from where the existing stage ends at this time, and we'll be wrapping the stage in this configuration. Around the stage, we'll be adding a little bit of additional square footage on the side here, the stage, and at the rear. Some of the main goal of this project was the ability to accommodate restrooms for the general public out of Oakland. There aren't any public restrooms, so we want to incorporate that into this facility. We wanted a nice dressing room for the performers coming to this stage. Also, we wanted the ability to be able to get equipment from the loading area at the rear back here from the Rye Patch Estate onto the stage, having to go all the way around on the bridge, come around this walk. Also, we need storage, general storage for sound equipment, pianos, tables, chairs, miscellaneous items of that nature. So all these were added into the program, and so we've come up with a very symmetrical plan. We've located the public restrooms over here on the right side, which is coming away from the bridge over here on the right side. So the general public can get to the restrooms without having to really disturb any performance on the stage. We've got the entrance doors located on the back side, so they won't be opening up to the general public across the waterway here. Then we've located a central passage on access to the center line of the stage to bring a ramp up from the loading area in the rear. It'll bring through and bring all kind of equipment, marine bands, ballet, whatever, will be performing here, so they can get all their equipment in there without having being very cumbersome. Then we have both dressing rooms off this central passageway. They're both the same size. Large dressing area here. We've got probably a counter here that would be on each side. And then we have a small restroom facility off each one, and then some general storage closets off each for this miscellaneous storage. Over on the far left side is just a large general storage room for the sound equipment, the piano, table, chairs, and then we've got a mechanical electric room over there to serve all the mechanical needs of this building. Architecturally, we picked up on, I say the architecture really of the Third Red Hall of Fame, so we're trying to play off of the best building on the site in terms of architectural. And we also played a little bit off the stables off the Rye Patch backside there. So what we have is this is the view really from the Rye Patch side coming up the rear. We got this is from the stage side. We have this is the central archway here. These would be large 10 foot wide by 10 foot high doors that would be sort of like stable doors. The overhead track that would go back, slide back, and allow you to bring in all your equipment front and back and shut the doors if you want to, or we can leave the doors open, or just to have the ability to have the performers come to and fro. What we feel like is going to happen is a lot of the people like the ballet, some of the other performing arts groups have talked about having portable screens and they're using this area right here to serve as a way to use this back area as a backstage area. And then they use portable screens in this area to use sort of the backstage to come to and fro on the stage area. But what we've done, we've tried to do this large opening then with an archway here, a large arch glass window, and that would be on the front and back of the building. This is the view from Rye Patch right here. So this arch would be continuous through that passageway. So you get this nice backdrop for the stage to have this large arch. And figure some nights you'd be getting toward dusk and you have this nice well-lit archway on the back to give a nice look for the back of the stage. So these are big support doors to that support room right here. These are just some small windows into the restrooms and the storage rooms here. So we're very simple, very understated architecture, not trying to overpower the garden, just trying to blend in what we have there. And this area right here, what we're showing is potential for just trying to cover these blank walls with some sort of growing vegetation to soften the walls right here that wouldn't have any windows in them. So, we also talked about trying to introduce some airflow in this area with some overhead maybe exhaust fans to be able to pull air from the stage area back through that area, so we create a little bit of a breeze to maybe help some of the performers during the hot summer months. So we're trying to work that out right there. But all these areas would be heated and cooled through here. Heating air, supply, conditioned air in all these spaces right here. This area we would not condition right through here. So. Roger, am I leaving anything out? That up in here. Okay.
As far as the funding for this project, like I said, we have the funding available to get started with the project. The Friends have been using their funding to pay for CAM's work so far today, surveying work. The idea would be that if council has no problem with it, they would go ahead with the final drawings, hopefully be able to have a bid package ready by summertime, have a contractor hired so that they could start work immediately after the contract series next summer. And then during the winter, fall, winter, spring season, they would construct this and be ready for the spring of 2008 with this. The rest of the money for the building would come from fundraising and from other sources. We have some money in reserves right now. I think it's around $60,000 that we've been building up for the last several years from contributions that we've received for Hopeland's Garden.
Looks like a great job, Cam, and everyone else that worked on it. I guess only one question, and I'm sure when you plan something like this, you're building something new, you want to make sure you have enough space, looking out ahead for years to come, and I know that that was looked at, right? You feel like this is enough space to, you know, to do conceivably whatever you might want to do on the stage for X number of years.
Yeah, we've got Mark, that might be able to address that better, but we feel like we're... The earlier scheme was a larger scheme, and the storage rooms were pretty close to the same size. But the scale of the building, we felt like it was a little too large for the garden, so we're trying to scale this down, but at the same time meet the needs of the future. So I think we'll accommodate the needs.
Right.
It's also limited somewhat by the size of the stage itself. The present stage seems to be adequate. The largest group that we have, of course, is the Marine Band around the 4th of July. And the present stage seems adequate for them. The biggest problem they have is finding some place to change to accommodate their instruments. And this will certainly take care of that, particularly with the ramp in the rear, being able to bring
sure.
their instruments and anything else up through that ramp in the rear, rather than having to come through the gravel path on the right hand.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a major improvement, isn't it? Just that alone. At one time, I think in the first conception of what it might be, there was going to be a large room, I think, that would be in the center for possibly, and you could open up walls, doors, to have a function of some sort. But I guess that is not to be. I wondered about the need for it to start with anyway, but just a comment, no question.
That was part of the original thought process. But after a lot of debate by many individuals, as you stated, they felt like it really wasn't needed, and the fact that the understanding from Mrs. Islin's will of trying to keep this a very quiet, peaceful area, that the appropriateness of having the stage there and the concerts there was fine, but not to have massive meetings or other type parties that could take place in a pavilion of that nature. So it was decided not to do that. As far as a couple of the other functions that will really be improved through this, is there will be underground wiring for sound equipment so that the soundboard could be on the opposite side of the stage to adequately feed everything. And we are going to be working with the various individuals that provide the sound now so that we could plug the speakers in without having to have wires cross the stage in various areas. And so we'll be accommodating all the things that we have seen over the last 20 years as to what are the needs there for the various types of concerts and events that take place on the stage.
Yeah, sure.
Well, he was the conductor beyond the field thing. And so, given the experience that he's had for many years traveling the country, you know, he gave us his input. He thought this would be big enough.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's great. That's great.
We have at least one room for the storage of the piano, the climate control. It's the one of the piano that we have there now. Even worse. If you've ever been in that block building that's there now, it's a wonder that it's still operational.
Right.
We've had Steve Peterson and John McMahon work with us as far as sound is concerned. We think the sound will be the sound system will be greatly improved over what we have now. And we've tried to anticipate everything that we possibly can to enhance what we have there now. And I'm sure all of you will agree, openness is one of the greatest assets
we have in the city. It certainly is. I'm sure you've looked at everything over and over and upside down and all around. And it looks good. One last very important question. I don't see a flagpole anywhere. Is it going to be a flagpole?
The flagpole is around 50 feet to the left of that area.
Okay.
Already.
Yes. Yeah. So it'll remain basically
it'll
where it is.
Remain where it's at now.
Okay.
I just want to thank you. It's so complimentary to the setting, and I think you and the committee have looked at it from so many angles, and what you ended up with is really attractive, and I think everybody will be thrilled. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah, I really like to commend the committee that has been working tirelessly for, gosh, almost 2 years now, and designing, redesigning, re-looking at it, and taking in all those considerations, and they have really done a lot of hard work. This did go before the executive committee of the Friends at their last meeting in November. They gave their approval of it at that time, and so like I said, before they took that last step, they wanted to meet with City Council and make sure you had, if you had any questions or concerns, that they could incorporate it.
I have no concerns. I think it, like Jane and others have said, it's y'all have done a wonderful job. And it looks good.
Good. A couple weeks ago. Good. And they had no problem.
Yeah.
Good.
And thanks to Hank and Mike as well.
They're the next ones.
Oh, you're still coming up. Okay. Well, thank you. Well, thank you beforehand and afterwards.
Okay. The next item we have then is concerning the City Hall space. At the Horizons, we presented concerns on our part that we were outgrowing the space that we have here at this building. A few years ago, we moved out our public works and engineering staff. We quickly filled in that space. We then added on to the roof area where our air conditioners used to be, and we put them over here on a new metal structure. And we are now this year going to be asking the Neighborhood Services Division to move out, and Richard Pierce would be moving out to make space so that the Planning Department would have a little bit more space that they need. So we're just at a point where we need more room. We know that in the next year or two, we're not going to have enough space, and that's the reason we're moving some people out. But we want to look towards the future. And we want to look towards the future not just a few years from now, but 10, 20 years from now as to what might be the needs we have. At Horizons, the general consensus that I received was that you prefer to see our staff as much as possible to stay together so that when someone comes into the City Hall, a number of services could be provided in one location. You also said, though, that you wanted, if at all possible, that we stay in the downtown area, and if we're going to stay in the downtown area, if at all possible, stay in this building. So those are the two things that we brought back from that meeting. We went out to a number of architects and selected Hank Moorman and Mike Holland to help us with the space assessment needs and to do an analysis as to a number of alternatives using this building, with the final alternative building at another location, assuming in the downtown area. When we looked at that other location and looked at the price for that, we were talking of a project close to $16 million. It quickly brought reality back to me that we could find room in this building somehow, some way. So we're presenting tonight five different alternatives. And probably one of the first things that you'll have to decide is, do you want to maintain the conference center downstairs? And if you do, that right away takes out several alternatives. We could go ahead and, I think it was Councilmember Smith's suggestion that we could go out to the alley in B Lane and extend this building out as another suggestion. Another one that we looked at was just bringing a third story, not on the full building, but just on the back half. So as you're facing from Park Avenue, you would still see the same silhouette or design as we've had here for the last 100 years, and then the back half would have a third story. So in alternate A4 and A5, it presents keeping the conference center downstairs, keeping City Hall where it's at, but coming up with some different alternatives, expanding and going up to the third floor. We do have some prices here for everything. We're looking for guidance from you tonight. If you feel like we don't have enough time to fully discuss it, we could carry on this conversation at the Horizons meeting this spring. But we think we're at the point we're ready to bring some suggestions to you and to get your direction to go forward. And with that, I'll turn it over to Hank.
Thank you, Roger. I might say that this is a little bit involved and it's going to take a little bit of study on your part in trying to determine which of the options that you're going to elect to proceed. We worked closely with Bill and Roger during the development of this and continually developed other options. First, we had a couple options, and we said, well, let's try this option, let's try that option. So we've got five options here. And in with our time constraints, I'm going to just run through this. I think you've all got a handout. And basically, this just tells you about the feasibility study and the conclusions that we arrived. The first thing that we did was we reviewed every department. We found out how many people you have in each department. We found out how much square footage each department is utilizing. And then we projected along with the department head the current needs. This is not a long term, but this was the very current needs as of right now. And I think I saw in this other handout where you're moving some of the departments out of City Hall now because of lack of space. So this one page shows that you have a current staff of 47.5 and 2,600 square feet of office space. You need six additional employees now, today, from the department head's requirements, and about another 1,300 square feet. One more. Okay. This is a plan of what you have in the way of your existing building. It shows the various departments and what's being occupied by the city staff. The probably most crowded department we found was accounting. You've got two and three people put in offices that'll hold one, but you've got two or three people in. The city manager needs another office. The planning department needs an additional office space. So with that in mind, we went ahead and did one proposal to just meet those current needs, and I think that's the last proposal. But I'll run through these options real briefly and then try to answer any questions if you have them. Under option one, we propose to move the council chambers downstairs in place of the meeting space that you have down there now, public meeting room, and utilizing the space upstairs and some other additional spaces not being utilized upstairs for additional offices. And on this particular proposal, option one, we moved the existing council room downstairs and indicated an addition to this to increase the council chambers if that becomes required. This option is $1.3 million, $1.7 million with the landscaped public terrace on the upper levels. And I believe, Roger, you have the more detailed breakdown where we did all the cost and the backup information.
And they have that.
They have that also?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not going to get into that right now. Option two is move council stairs again downstairs and the addition of third or fourth floor. And then public space, again, at the roof level on the outside. This particular proposal was a small addition to the council chambers and retaining the public space out there in the alley. In lieu of moving the entire building out to the alley level. So this addition is primarily going up but not going back. The next option is option three, where we're looking at a new third floor, remodeling the second floor and moving the chamber down to the ground level, and almost doubling the seating in the chamber areas, increasing the building all the way to the edge of the alley street or the sidewalk. This fourth floor would have a public terrace and public space open option. And this would be developing some public space up on the roof level. Option four is retaining the current two-story building, add the third floor, optional fourth floor, and retaining the current public spaces. So that means we keep the meeting room where it is and the council chambers where they are. Option five is an option that will meet your current needs and probably your needs within the next 4 or 5 years. And this is an awful hard projection to make in terms of how many people are going to be required to add to the staff based on the projected population growth. But in this scheme, we propose to move the council chambers downstairs in the public meeting space, utilizing the council chamber area for additional space upstairs. And this is, of all the various items, the cheapest option. I think it was $658,000. You've got to back up as far as the cost on that. But that's only going to hold you through, at the outside, 5 years. It won't hold you through 10 or 20 years. The last option, of course, was a brand new building, and we picked a site in town on Lawrence Street, being in the downtown business area. It was a little restaurant right across from the old theater. The Zippernos are doing their new development there. We proposed to utilize that and build a new four-story building. We'd need a parking garage, and we'd have to take the historic building and move it to the rear of the site. And this is just a proposal. There may be other properties available downtown. But But as Roger said, you see that we're looking at, what was that, $15.5 million for a new facility, staying in the downtown area. The last page on here is just a graphic representation of the various costs for all the various options. I think each of the options has its pros and cons. And this is, you're in for a tough decision on which one of these options that you want to go with. But I believe we've covered a gamut of things that we can do with this existing building downtown and the space it's in. One of the things I did mention, most of the options except for option one or option five, we were proposing a new elevator, and that elevator would be located back over this area, going all the way downstairs and coming up to the new third or fourth floor, whichever one you do. We've got a fair amount of space, this wasted space back in here. If reconfiguration, I think we'll utilize that space, especially if we move the council chambers downstairs into the existing meeting space. Then we can incorporate all of that space in the business and develop more offices. If you've got any specific questions, I'd be happy to try to address them at this time. As I said, it's going to take some study. It's going to take a little bit of time to comprehend the nuances of all these various options and what your options are going to be. Your biggest thing is projecting, where am I going to be when and how many people are we going to have to accommodate? And when is this going to happen?
Right. Just looking, I agree with what you said. Excellent study, but it's going to take more study time on our part than just tonight. That's for sure. But if we're looking for the largest number of employees, you know, look into the future so that you don't have to change again. And I, for one, and I think we all feel this way, I hope that we never have to leave this building. Right. This is a historic building, and it's in the center of town, and that's where the city hall ought to be, I think. But you take option one, and gives you 33 new employees, if I understand it correctly.
That's correct.
And gives you more seating for council, which we will need. Certainly in the future. Option 2 gives us 50 new employees. But option 3 gives us 60 new employees. Now that price there does include a third floor, right, in the back, addition of the third floor?
That's correct, all option 3.
Okay. And it gives us larger council space, 60 new employees. Well, that's on the third floor, isn't it?
It's 95 employees.
It's 95 total.
95 in that option.
Right. It takes away the conference center.
That's correct.
However, and as Roger and I talked one time in the past, at the time we renovated this building, you know, we really needed a place like the conference center where a larger group could come. Now that we have Newberry Hall and there are other meeting areas, conference rooms around the downtown, I think that raises the question, do we really have to have the conference center? Personally, I'd like to keep it, but if we're looking at the overall picture here in the future and the vision for how many employees we need, and that raises a question, I guess, is any way to go halfway and still keep a conference room with the knowledge that we could make a change, you know, in 10 years perhaps?
You it's kind can, of remarkable that you see yeah. this, because I just met with the owners of Newberry Hall, and they want to double it. We're looking at building plans to double.
They want what?
They want to double the size of Newberry Hall. Oh. Just met with them today.
On option 4 could be an interim scheme that would probably get you at least 10 to 20 years of additional life by going through the third store floor. At that particular time, you could always then extend out to the alley with the conference center and the council chambers, or if you really needed more space, you could convert at that time and eliminate the conference center. But option four gives you the most flexibility, probably, if you want to do something as an interim and then expand later on.
Roger, you're right. I'm Mark. That's
And like I said, your third floor, if we go to a third floor, which to me is, if it were my choice, and I'm not trying to influence anybody, but option four gives us what we need for on the employees. We could also then do the structural work at that time, knowing that 10, 20 years in the future, you may need to expand and do some of the steel work out towards the alley so that you wouldn't have to duplicate in the future. You could even, in other words, put a roof over that area so that everything that's built in the future would just be more underneath it.
That's right.
So there's some things you could do. Now, this option here, and it's an intriguing thing to think about. If you build a third floor, you could even build an open area up on top on the roof for entertainment or other type of events. And when it also was mentioned that we would be adding an elevator, we're adding an elevator, not eliminating the other elevator. So we would then have two elevators in this building.
And this would be a large elevator that you could hold furniture, this sort of thing, from floor to floor.
And get more than four people in.
Right.
No, I got to say, four jumps out of me really is the most logical move. And actually, it's the most bang for the buck right now.
I agree.
It really, it gives you 50 space for 50 more people. And I would say if you fill in eventually, we could actually expand out there and probably pick up the other 20 or 30 people that we might need, if we ever needed them.
Yeah, one of the things that I was talking to Jeff Wallace earlier today, and we were just kind of joking and kidding one another as to how things have changed in the last 30 years. And if you take 20 years from now, we don't know what type of a city hall we're going to need. It may be a virtual city hall, and that people aren't going to be coming down here to pay bills and see people. You get on your computer and your screen at home and talk to that person. And, I mean, just 20 years ago, we were using carbon paper for a lot of the work that we did. Yeah, Sarah says, no, that was only 10 years ago. Things have changed rapidly. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. So to me, you build for what's going to be in the immediate future, 10 to 15 years from now. The third floor would be adequate. You look at the price tag on this, we're talking a little over $2 million. Both North Augusta, who's looking at building a new city hall, and the county are talking over $20 million. So I think we're being very cost-effective on our decision-making in any of these options. But this would certainly get us everything we need and still retain the conference center and the city council chambers here, if that's what you all want.
And you stay downtown. You stay in this building.
That's correct.
Rod, where do you plan for these extra 50 employees to park the cars?
That's a good question. You would have to bring that up.
Well, you wouldn't have 50 new employees right away.
We wouldn't have 50 new employees immediately, but eventually, you know, if you fill up all that space,
there's an option you could go to that many.
You could go that many.
How many employees do we have in this building now?
Right around 50 right now.
47.5 or something.
I think that was on some page, but I lost it. Okay.
Well, you've got some half-time employees, and that's what we were calling.
It's hard to keep up those half-time employees.
All right, so that doubles the number of employees?
Yes. That's what I said. We should be in good shape, and we did move out one whole department earlier, and I wouldn't be looking at bringing them back in, but we do need to expand immediately. That's why we have in the budget this year rental funding for the community services and neighborhood services to move out to another location.
Where are they moving?
We haven't decided yet. We're looking at two or three different locations.
You're going to lease them? Or
it'll be a lease space somewhere on the north side or downtown area.
Roger, from a personal standpoint, the only problem I have with that is it doesn't increase what you have here.
Right. I mean, you're I don't want to say you're stuck, but you're limited to the existing space that we have here currently.
And we looked at trying to knock that wall out and go that way. We just can't make it work and get the circulation and the fire escapes or fire exits out of here.
So at some point in time, I believe, again, it may not even be the number of employees, but this room here may need to be expanded just to accommodate larger crowds as we get more and more people that want to come and talk.
I don't see a new office for you in any of these plans either.
No, I'm going up on the upper deck.
On the rooftop deck.
We couldn't find a direct correlation between population expansion and personnel required by city. That's a kind of a thing that we can't get a grasp on. Say, okay, we're going to double in 20 years, so you need double the amount of people. But we don't know that. We can't pin that down.
And the city's done a good job of holding that down, that ratio. You look at some cities, and they have double the employees we do for the same number.
I just went through one in Lexington. Very nice. Very expensive.
Yeah, right. Well, do everyone agree we need further thinking time on this and thought?
Yes.
And we certainly appreciate the work, Hank, you and Mike, and others that have participated, whoever they may be. This is major decision for council.
Starting point, and any of these can be modified. Any of the options.
Right.
Well, we'll have you think about this, and then we'll bring this back probably at Horizons, and then we'll make a decision at that time.
Okay.
Could this room be reconfigured to seat more people, or is there some kind of fire requirement for square footage?
No, you've got the exit requirements met. We tried to go with knocking the back wall out.
Right.
We can't do that because of the stairwell and that sort of thing. And that's really where it brought up to us that if we're going to do this, I personally would like to see it on the ground floor where everybody can walk in and out and you don't have to worry about this elevator situation that you've got now. And you can have an overflow crowd.
We could have, couldn't we? Not that we necessarily want that, but we could have.
I think the larger the population, the more your potential of doing that is.
But I do appreciate your leaving us the option to keep the public meeting room downstairs. I just think that's really made this a city hall, not just a city office building. And I sure would like to see that feeling remain in the community that this is a city hall. And I frankly love it that some of the high school proms are down there in the spring and not out on, I don't know. I just like it that they're in town. And so I appreciate that very much, and it's interesting.
Well, there's one option that we didn't. We could utilize this space and move this all the way up to the third floor. But we didn't.
No.
You know, the options go on and on and on, but there is that potential.
Actually, I would like to suggest the possibility that we could wait till later, but now is not a bad time either, that we could actually have screens downstairs if we, on the rare occasion when we get that overflow crowd, we could actually use the downstairs, have it properly mic'd, and have a full screen display down there, the whole thing, and work it that way.
That'd be very easy to do right now.
Yeah.
When we had the Woodside annexation in 2001, we had a large crowd over here in the hallway, and we hooked up a monitor and a TV right there. So, I mean, that would not be that hard to do that. And, you know, if we're going to do work on this building, we could certainly do that at the same time.
We're actually doing that same thing in churches.
One of the things that council would need to understand that if we do go up to a third floor, this portion of the building would become unavailable for a period of time. You know, during part of the construction, as they have to enclose that area up there, then this.
And we could probably move downstairs.
We don't know what it's going to take to go to that third floor. We know we can achieve it, but we don't know what it's going to
take. So that's going to always be the next step.
I'm a little nervous about that fourth floor terrace for public parties, frankly. I don't know.
Hank, one thing. These cost estimates that you've given, they're good through 2006, right? That's if everything is built in year 2006, 2006?
These are current prices.
Right.
Not inflation.
No. So if we got to get started fast, then if we're going to do that.
Construction has gone up about 25% in the last 6 months.
Right.
And it will continue to rise?
So,
it's not coming down.
So if we start sometime mid-year, let's say next year, what do you estimate the percent price to be, increase?
I wish I could project.
I know. That's
if I could do that, it'd be great. But
loaded question.
I don't think we're going to see the inflation that we've had in the last 2 years in this next 2 years. But we're going to have inflation.
Right. Right. Certainly.
Interest rates are bound to shoot up.
Certainly. Okay.
Let me just add personally, Hank, I'm over here. I just want to comment that you've given us a number of options to consider. It's very comprehensive, and I just appreciate the different options you have in terms of what you shared with us.
It gives you a lot of food for thought.
It does. Mm-hmm.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Well, this concludes our work session. City Council work session this evening, and in just a moment or two, we'll go into our regular meeting. Anybody need to take a break of any sort?
I did good.
I did.
Okay. I did not.
Well, Sarah said that the not best way down. After our executive session.
No, I'm not.
No, we didn't do that.
Before we don't do it last year, we did a couple times before.
Cry.
Both.
Ooh, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I did, when I take you in a room by yourself, in the back.
I do too.
Okay. Hawaii. His parents had a time period up there.
Exciting.
That's what Courtney
Not
was
a bad about. Price either.
It's
a lot of money. Comparison to $20 million.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Aiken City Council meeting of November 27th, 2006. We're pleased that everyone is here, and thank you for coming and helping us out on our decision process. If you desire to stand with us for a prayer and a pledge, we ask you to do that.
Dear Lord, once again, you've made it possible for us to convene to this chamber and talk about our city business. We have many blessings in our city. We thank you so much for what you've done for us. In this season now that we're in, Thanksgiving and celebration, we ask you to be with us. We ask you to help us focus not only on ourselves, our families, but on those in need, those in pain, those hurt in some way that we might individually in any way we can assist them, help them. This certainly is a season for giving and forgiving, and you would want us to do that. And we ask that you help us to do that, guide us that, give us wisdom, that we might do that in our own way. We thank you for our city council. We thank you for our staff who does such a fine job in giving us information on city council so that we can help us make decisions. And we thank you mostly for our citizens who spend their time and care as much or more about our city sometimes as we do. But collectively, we work together, and we need to continue to work together to do the right thing. And when we share ideas, it is very helpful. I think there's no single idea better than several ideas on subjects, so we welcome those thoughts. We welcome those here this evening. Now, as we go through the agenda, we ask that you be with us on each and every individual item, and help us to do those things that would please you, and that give us the wisdom and knowledge to do the best we can for our community, for our citizens, to improve the quality of life as best we can in Attican, in our city. And Lord, we'll give you the glory and the honor for all the good things that happen. In your name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any additions or deletions to the agenda? If not, do we have a motion in a second?
Move for adoption of the agenda, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. First item is the minutes. Consideration of the minutes for the work session and the regular meeting of November 13th, 2006. Any comments? If not, do we have a motion in a second?
So moved.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any comments? No comments. All hands are for approval. Passage unanimously. Under old business, if we have appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have 9 appointments here tonight. And actually, they're all reappointments for you. Mayor Cavanaugh would like to recommend the reappointment of Mark Hudgens to the Environmental Committee, McDonald Law to the Design Review Board, Councilwoman Price, John Glenn to be reappointed to the Environmental Committee, Frank Boltwright to be reappointed to the General Aviation Commission. Councilmember Smith would like to recommend Don Broderick reappointment to the Design Review Board and Ed Giobi to the Planning Commission. Councilmember Sprawls would like to recommend Keith Coons be reappointed to the Board of Zoning Appeals and Kay Broll to the Planning Commission. And Councilwoman Waters would like to recommend the reappointment of Wilkins Bird to the Planning Commission. Those are your 9 appointments, and we do have some other ones pending if Council has any other appointments later.
Okay, we have some other nominations, but why don't we go through this first? Are there any reason why we wouldn't want to take this on one vote?
No. Except Keith is on the Board of Zoning Appeals, Design Review.
Right. Right.
Is that right?
BZA.
That's good. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have a motion and second for approval of
so moved, Mr. Mayor.
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and second. Any comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? It passes unanimously. All right. Now, if there are any, why don't we take up any nominations for some remaining vacancies?
Yes, sir.
Yes, go ahead, Dick.
I have a few here today. One is Mr. Paterniti, who I had appointed to the Economic Development Committee. Is resigning from that committee because I wanted to appoint him to the Board of Zoning Appeals, which he is pleased to do. And in his place, I have Mr. Keith Shaver, who will be willing to serve and happy to serve and has some good background for it on the Economic Development Committee. And then for the Aiken Housing Authority, I also nominate Mr. Channing Jones, who also has good background.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any others?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to reappoint Robert Stallworth to the Board of Zoning Appeals.
Okay. All right. Any others?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to recommend the reappointment of Ed Waltz to the Planning Commission and also Mr. John Burkhalter to the Park Commission.
Okay. Any others? I have one then. Board of Zoning Appeals, Lee Boylston, my appointee who served very well for a long time, has resigned, and I'd like to appoint Nancy Dukes. She lives at Newberry Street. Everyone has an application here, a nomination form for her.
Wasn't she on that before?
She was on that some years ago. Yeah. She comes with high regard to for reappointment from Lee Boylston and others. Anyone else? Okay, we'll move on. Those nominations then would be on the agenda for the next meeting for final approval by council. Item 2 under old business is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex property off Lloydtown Road north of Red Street to be zoned planned residential. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken, certain property consisting of 30.76 acres of land, more or less, owned by Jack Cooper and T.E. Mixon and located at Lloydtown Road north of Red Street, and to zone the same planned residential. This came before you at the last meeting, and we discussed at that time that there would be 117 units. They have agreed that along the northern boundary, there's a dirt road there now, and it'd be best to have a privacy fence. They have agreed to that. That along Tennessee Avenue, behind the existing houses, that there'd be a 25-foot undisturbed buffer. There's also a water tank at this location. There might have been some confusion at the last meeting, but the water tank right now is not being reviewed for annexation. We are making an application to the Planning Commission to have that come in, and that will be reviewed by them at the January meeting. Come back to you after that time. We wanted to make sure that you want to annex this property before we ask you to annex our water tank, so that had to come first. There's also some question I have from some citizens who are concerned that there are some tires back there. The Planning Commission discussed this at one of their previous meetings. The developer at that meeting said that there should be no problem with the removal. So if council wanted to add that as a condition, you can. Currently, that is not one of the conditions we have, though, within the recommendation from the Planning Commission. Although there was discussion, they did agree to it at that time. We do have 11 conditions. We read those at the last meeting. None of them have changed from that time. And so for your consideration tonight, this is second reading of public hearing ordinance to annex 3.76 acres on the east side of Lloydtown Road, just north of Red Street, to be zoned planned residential PR.
Okay, thank you, Roger. Would you repeat that one thought about the tires that could be added as a condition?
Several citizens have spoken to us in the last few months asking, well, what about the tires that are there? We're not absolutely certain whether they're there or not. We've heard that some of these tires are buried. Somebody said they were removed. This was brought up at the Planning Commission meeting, and it's my understanding from that evidence that the developer at that meeting said there would be no problem and that he has intended to remove those tires. If you wanted to add that as a condition, it is not listed, but if there is concern on council members' part, you could add that as a condition for the annexation.
I'd like to suggest that we add it. We've heard discussions for years about tires being back there and what have you, and whether or not they are, but just to make sure that if they are, that they're taken up.
Okay.
That's what we're saying, right?
That is correct.
They would be removed if they're there.
Mr. Mayor, I think in the audience we have Mr. Williams, who was the president of the organization at the time and who was part of the group to contact the press to get something done. Mr. Williams, do you want to verify that they're there? Yes.
Mr. Mayor, while he's coming up,
sure.
You may recall the discussion we had at the last meeting. If you look at the ordinance itself, not the memo, but the ordinance, condition number 8 actually was modified. This is the condition that dealt with the 25-foot buffer. And we did add some language there to make sure that there was that it was clear what would be required in order to keep that buffer. And if they need to add plant material, they would do that. And that
Okay. That was a buffer question.
This is the language from the Hollow Creek Annexation Ordinance, and this is the language we'll be using in the future for these types of buffer questions.
Very good.
This is the compromise that worked out when talking to Dacre Stoker and another from Open Land Trust.
Very good. Okay. Very good. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayor, Councilman, thank you all. My name is Lindsay Williams. I live at 1354 Representative Drive in Aiken. In 1989, D8 gave the owners, Jack Cooper, Shorty Mixon, and Tommy Mixon, options for cleaning up the approximately 30 or 40,000 tires. I'm going to just pass this run, if I may.
You certainly may, if you'd like to. That's a lot of tires, too, isn't it?
I have some more, just so you can kind of get an idea of what's back here.
What year was that?
1989. At the June 20th meeting of Ada County Council, Pinecrest residents asked the council to tell the landowners to remove the tires. DHEC, well, instead the council voted to ask the Aiken office of DHEC to take action against the property owners, Jack Cooper of Augusta, Tommy Mixon, and Shorty Mixon of Aiken County. DHEC sent the owners a letter June 22nd, giving them 30 days to get rid of the tires. According to DHEC, spokesman Ken Montgomery said the tires were of health hazards. And after nothing was done, DHEC sent the owners a second letter dated July 28th, giving them 15 days to clean up the site. And then if nothing would be done, they would be fined. DHEC said $200 a day. And anyway, Aiken County Council, they requested that the owners attend the County Council meeting July 18, 1989. Anyway, they received a letter from the law office of Jack Cooper. I'll pass it around. I won't read it all. But he stated that he wrote this letter to Mr. Montgomery, DHEC, from Mr. Cooper. I would like to ask for your assistance and the assistance of any governmental agencies that might be available to assist in having the responsible parties remove the tires from the property. I did not go over there at that time, but I have gone over there within the last several months, and there must be 30,000 or 40,000 tires on the property. It has rendered our property completely useless. Anyway, and this have Tommy Mixon and Shorty Mixon is signed by Jack L. Cooper. I'd like to pass it around if I may.
This estimate of tires, was that based on what you could see and just assuming that there are more, or was did you actually see roughly that many tires? On the surface?
Yes. On the surface, and from the picture that was in the newspaper, that was just one angle.
Right, right. Now, many of those have been removed, though, right?
No.
Is it still 30 to 40?
Right.
Oh, you're not finished yet. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
DHEC gave the landowners three options to getting rid of the tires: haul them to the county landfill, haul them out of the state, or bury them on site. At the July 18th meeting, the county council meeting, Cooper stated that he asked the county to haul the tires to the landfill and waive a fee charged to dump the tires in the landfill. Council refused, saying it didn't have the money or the equipment to do the job. Councilwoman McKenzie also told Cooper that the landfill cannot accommodate the thousands of tires and that a new landfill won't be completed until at least 1 or 2 years. Burying the tires, it would solve the mosquito problem. There was a big mosquito problem. And Mr. Cooper and Mr. Mixon knows they decided to bury the tires. And DHEC stated that they would have to maintain it. And they mean by maintaining it, they mean checking for selling to make sure that none of the tires are exposed. And this is the other part of that. And the questions that I have are, what are the hazards of digging up the tires? What are we looking at the soil and water contaminations? And to dig them up, how would they be disposed of? Those are my questions.
Well, I think that that can be answered by having a condition here that the developer will remove those tires. Okay, where he removes them, that's his responsibility, now, right?
We're annexing the area that the tires are on.
Under right? conditions.
So we won't get a situation where, this isn't in city limits, so we don't have to do this.
No, right? With those conditions, that's why I'm advocating adding it to the condition list. Mm-hmm.
To where he is. Just that make the tires sure will be removed.
It's clear in everyone's mind that those tires are part. Does anybody see a problem with that?
I didn't see a problem with what I'm saying.
Adding the removal of the tires as a condition.
No, sir. You don't have a problem.
I don't have a problem with it. Is there a problem with adding it?
I was puzzled when the comment was made. We may want to use it. I think it's necessary that we have that as part of
that's what I'm saying.
The conditions that should be a. It's not an option here.
And we're not guaranteeing space in the city landfill for those tires, right?
I've been on a committee for the last 10 years that was appointed by the governor on getting rid of waste tires throughout the state of South Carolina. And there are several different ways that the tires could be gotten rid of, but there are some very strict DHEC standards on doing that.
Yes.
They have a fund. That's why people now are paying $2 every time you buy a new tire. It's to dispose of old tires. And they have cleaned up numerous sites throughout the state. In fact, they've run out of locations as far as cleanup is concerned. The way they now get rid of them is to cut them up or burn them. They've used them for crumb rubber, for septic fields, they're using them in cement kilns for fuel. It's a great fuel source. And so there's a number of different ways. And in the past, DHEC has even helped support funding to get rid of tires. But that would be up to the applicant and the developer as to how that process would be taken care of. But if you would just put in here that as part of the conditions that the tires would need to be removed, then it would be up to the owner of the property to get rid of the tires in the proper manner required by DHEC.
Let me just add to what Mr. Williams is saying, that at the time the discussion took place with County Council, what was desired was the tires be taken to the landfill at that time. And that would have occurred, but the new landfill was not ready. The amount of tires that were there, according to what was stated, would have filled up the landfill. So the least of the options was to dig a huge hole and push them over and bury them in place in the back of the community. But prior to that, as Mr. Williams was saying, there were mosquito bites on children's bodies like you can't imagine, in addition to rats that you can't imagine. Water just sitting just caused a lot of health problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, are these houses going to be built on this property? Some of these structures?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Well, they can't build on top of it. I can't understand where on the site are the tires that you're not going to build. I mean, you're going to have to.
Well, the tires are in the back of Mr. Curry's home, who's sitting out in the audience now. And Mr. Curry and his neighbor, who else, Lindy?
Why don't we just solve this whole thing and move on by adding this as a condition?
Mr. Mayor, if I may, I would ask the applicant, the ordinance requires all of the conditions to be met within 180 days. Would you be able to remove the tires within 180 days?
I got it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Great.
Well,
we could add number 12, something to the effect that all tires either buried or on the surface, however we want to state it, to be removed.
Mr. Mayor, I would just say that any tires located on the property shall be removed.
Good.
According to DHEC standards. In accordance with DHEC standards.
That's what I would put in there.
Okay.
That would solve the concerns you have about even digging them up in the first place. If DHEC says that's what we should do, then that's what they should do. But adding that phrase in there, according to DHEC standards, solves the issue as to whether it's safe or not, because they would not allow us or them to do anything that's not safe. Does that satisfy your concerns?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Lindsay. By the way, that picture of you and Leslie was really good.
I apologize. I didn't have time to run copies off.
Yeah, I wish you would run copies. I think we all would like to have a copy of
We're eaten up by mosquitoes.
Okay, now that we've resolved that, this is a second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. So if there's anyone that would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. Good evening.
My throat. Richard Evans, Fox Grove Farms. In relationship to the tires, it'll take us a minimum of 60 days to get a site grading permit. That would not be an issue, but if it gets slowed down or anything in bureaucracy-wise, 180 days might be tight.
I don't think we might go over that.
That's
you're
all
not going to make it 180 days. I could pretty much.
Well, that's why when I looked at this, yeah. I said, well, you know, there's carports. You know, that's not in 180 days. I thought this was more getting it recorded with the RMC office. But removing the tires, we're obviously going to do it as fast as we can.
We can make that prior to the issuance of any building permit.
Good. Yeah, that'd be more.
Okay.
It could take, especially if you go ahead and seek out funding to get these tires removed. If this is an illegal site, there might be some funding available. But that could take several months.
Yeah, it could. And for the record, so I have that in, as he was reading that, I've never seen that document. We have done a complete search of the South Carolina database. Jennifer Hughes from DHEC down here has did a search. There's no record of DHEC being involved in that. That is not an issue. I'm letting you know we did talk to them in detail, but if they're there, we have a good idea where they are. They will be removed. We never had a problem with any of that.
Well, I sense that there's been some doubt that there's been tires back there, but there are tires buried back there. I can assure you of that.
I believe you. I just want to know that the state didn't have it, so we did our search to try to find them. I'm sorry, go ahead.
While you're here,
yes, ma'am.
Question regarding the what kind of material you're going to build the homes out of?
We have not locked down exactly what it will be. Either be stick framed or metal framed. We're going to look at the best product that we can use. We would like to be as energy efficient as possible and sustainable in everything that we build and how we develop. So we will look at every system that is cost prohibitive and to deliver the best product.
Okay.
Richard, relative to the homes themselves and the development,
yes, ma'am.
Have you developed your covenants for the homes that are going in back there?
No, we have not developed them yet. We were waiting for our approval to start that process and get moving along on the process. I apologize for my throat.
That's okay. Don't.
At the last meeting, the question was asked, and I think there was a commitment to go ahead and do the
the covenants to ensure that the homes that are going in back behind Red Street and along Tennessee Avenue would fit into the neighborhood structure, would pretty much blend with what's already there. And I don't know which of you answered in the affirmative that you would ensure that.
Yes, Mr. DeSisto did. The covenants, maybe we were confused as in a homeowners association covenants is what I think that's what Ralph and I were thinking on that, which is more about, you know, no vehicles on parking areas. There'll be a lot of covenants dealing with the homeowners association.
Right.
The product itself being constructed is bound by what was submitted in elevations, character of the community, and that's why we went in detail to provide six elevations, all with carports, all with either carports or garages. So I guess I'm just making sure that's what we were thinking as in covenants as homeowners. But for the product itself, I would say we're pretty well committed, locked into what we can build on that site.
Items 5 and 6 is what we would be using as a staff to look at what's going to be built there, which is talking about the outside cannot be vinyl siding.
Correct.
It would be hardy plank, could be
brick, stone,
wood or stone or brick, that everyone will have either a garage or carport and has to conform in general to the designs that were submitted to you and are there with your package in front of you tonight.
Question regarding the landscape entrance. You asked that the landscape entrance off of Tennessee Avenue be waived and not have a landscape entrance there. Will there be a landscape entrance on either side, Lloydtown or
Lloydtown,
but not Tennessee?
Lloydtown, no, not Tennessee. Tennessee is an existing easement.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually planned as a road. It's already cut in
mm-hmm.
on all of those areas. That's just
something to just
it's just an extra road, extra traffic to flow through the site and get out. The main entrance will be Lloydtown Road. That will be the main entrance in and also where the heavy landscape median meeting all the requirements that are called for in the PR zoning.
If they were to put in a landscape meeting on Tennessee, which they could, that would mean that with the median, then your two roads going in and out would be right up against the property lines currently on either side. So you'd have a road right up against the edge of the property line because there's not the width
mm-hmm.
of the existing lot that was taken out for that road to go in there to provide. In other words, you need about 75, 80 feet minimum to have a nice landscape median
right.
road and then landscaping on the outside. With the road where it's at currently, you'll be able to have some landscaping on either side of that road, but not in the median.
Okay.
More tree line, something along
right.
that.
Right, and my concern is that Tennessee has some sort of landscaping
mm-hmm.
there. Rather than just
but it's not the median, it would be on the
right
side.
On the oh. side.
Yeah, it just won't be in the median. There will, you know, we prefer not to touch any trees or cut anything down. So, you know, the road part of it, along the side of it, we would like to keep it as natural as possible. So, yes, I would say there will be trees on there because the lots aren't that close to it. They have setbacks. Oh, excuse me. But yes, the quick answer is yes. On the side, there will be landscape area as you're coming into the
okay.
development from Tennessee.
The part in the center that's the open space buffer recreation area?
Yes, ma'am.
Is that going to be a green space? I mean, a lawn? Or
that will be classified as improved open space. The
uh-huh.
trails, and I apologize that we didn't bring where you can see the trails. There will be natural trails throughout the, I think it's 1.34 miles it adds up to, of walking trails throughout the development. But in that main open space area behind the clubhouse area, we were thinking some picnic pavilions, grills, that type of stuff, maybe some recreation area for children, more of a park-like setting, but we were intending to try to open that up a little bit, not just leave a big forest in there. One, because it more blends into the community and centers everyone in there, and at the same time, because of the way the open space is laid out there with the retention areas, the ponds, and the trails coming through, we think it's a very nice blend.
Are the ponds, are you going to have to fence those? Or?
We are not planning on fencing them, though.
So these aren't really retention ponds.
No,
these
detention,
are
retention. We count on Ed the city engineer to steer us through that to make sure it's the way we want, so they can fish possibly or so on and so forth.
But this park-like setting is not a retention area or a detention area.
No, ma'am.
You want to call it. Okay, that's definitely a public area.
Homeowners Association area.
Mr. Mayor, if there are no further questions.
Let's see if there's anyone else who would like to speak on the subject. Okay. Last evening. Richard, thank you. Thank you, Richard. Yes, sir. Okay.
Bill Clyburn, 664 Edgewood Street. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I just want to ask a couple of questions. My concern really is that it's a part of District 82, but of course it's going to be annexed into the city. Gotten a few calls, not a whole lot, and I was talking with one gentleman who was with the group, and I no longer see him here, and I had a couple questions for him because he was the one that I was talking with, and he was assuring me of the kinds of things that would be done that would be appreciated by the residents in that area. Let me ask you, on the residential development, as I understand it, the development will be coming into the city under those requirements. Can you tell me just quickly what does that detail in just in an outline way? I'm trying to find out whether, and I hope that the city will be on top of everything that's going out there. If it's going to come in as a residential development, is that correct?
Bill, one thing obviously gives the council more authority, and that's why you see a number of conditions here. Plus, it requires a conceptual design, which, if the developer wants to change, it's got to come back to city. Now, there may be some slight changes that our staff has the approval to make, but any major changes would come back to City Council. Would it go through planning as well?
Yes.
It would.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's something that we have with planned residential and also planned commercial. That's good, because we get an opportunity to see again and to judge whether we want to approve the changes or not, which we don't have without other zoning, let's say, put it that way.
Okay, that's
we,
fine.
We didn't have before.
The city would be on top of that. The last question, Mr. Mayor, is the engineering part of that. Now, will that be annexed into the city before the engineering is done? My concern about that, I don't know who the engineer is. I'm not sure who he is, but I certainly would want the city, or will the city, do the rechecking, or will they be given the approval?
Roger, would you answer that?
Yeah. What we have before us is a concept plan. At that point, once the concept plan is approved, then the developer will go back to the engineer, whoever that is, and ask for final drawings to be submitted. They'll go through our engineering staff. They'd also have to go to DHEC for final approval. But when we annex property or we look at rezoning a property, we don't look at engineering plans, so we leave that up to the staff to go ahead and review that and make sure it meets all the requirements.
Well, I mean, but the city of Aiken will be doing that.
We will go ahead.
Staff or whatever.
Yeah, we do not do the engineering, but we do the review of the engineering. That'd be the sewer, the water, the roads. And again, on the sewer and the water, that goes to DHEC for final approval.
And you will be giving your approval on that. Do we know, or will it be in the concern of who the engineer is at this time, or will that come later?
We have
never...
He has to be licensed by the state of South Carolina.
We do not get involved in selecting him.
But the bottom line is, you will check behind the engineer.
That is absolutely correct.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, is it Mr. Dudley? Is it Ed?
Thank you.
Mr. Dudley's done the preliminary engineering. Whether he'll do final engineering or not, that'll be up to, obviously, the consultant.
And then you all will be sure the materials that are specified are...
Yes. One of the things, Council, and I think it brings up an excellent point, is you have asked questions about the houses and the design and various other elements. If there's something that Council wants to see in relationship to that open area or the detention or the tree line or anything else, then now's the time to go ahead and specify it. Because when they get ready to go ahead and actually ask for grading permits and permits to go forward with this, we have 11 conditions here. You're going to be adding a 12th one that we will follow. But we, other than those 12 conditions and the concept plan, that is what staff uses to guide them through this whole process.
Do you think we need some, maybe a request that before, when the park is planned, it be reviewed by the planning office or the city council?
Again, we have it. You can specify as much as you want to concerning that park. Right now, we know it's an open space. They have not asked the city to take it over for dedication. I mean, they can always come back to council and say, here's 2 acres, we have a tot lot here, this is going to be a neighborhood park, we want the city to take it over. I mean, and then it's up to you whether you want to or not. Otherwise, it'll be up to the homeowners association as to what they want to do with that property in the future and how they want to maintain it.
It's just that this is one of the first times we've ever had anything to say about a big area of open space in the middle of a neighborhood, and it's just so important that it be right, you know.
Jane, do you have any things specifically that you would like to
I can't say that tonight because I don't know exactly what part. I don't know what kind of... He said he indicated that it was there were trees there that would need to come down.
Yeah.
And... I can understand that if you're going to have a ball field or a play area or something like that. But I don't know, I can't in my own mind identify exactly which space on the lot this is. And so I would just, I don't know. I
think he also said, correct me if I'm wrong, that there'd be about 6 miles walking trails?
1.34.
Richard?
1 mile.
How much?
1.34.
Oh, 1.34. I'm sorry. Okay.
1.34. And that'll go throughout the development, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. And those ponds that are there, because of the elevation change in that area, they would probably be more than likely would be detention ponds. I would be surprised if they're going to retain water. There's two different reasons for that. One, if you retain water, then there's going to be a liability issue on part of the city, and that's one thing that we would be looking at is do we want to have ponds out there with water in there that could become a liability, and we may say yes, we may not. You know, but because it's part of that stormwater system, which we will eventually take over through a deed of dedication, Larry will look at that. And again, if the slope going in there is something that a child could walk in and walk out carefully, then it's okay. But if it's a very steep slope, then you don't want to have that liability issue. But those are things that will be worked out between the engineer, the developer, and the city of Aiken.
But say if the homeowners association, you said there will be that, would have a problem with what you were doing in this park, then that would be a forum for that.
Yeah, it would be their decision. Because a homeowners association, as Mr. LeDuc pointed out, we're not deeding that to the city. So the homeowners association might say they want a soccer field in there. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd like to, you know, it's their community, even though it is the roads and so on are part of the city. But when you do a homeowners association, that's one of the benefits of a homeowners association, to have some control on things you might like in your community.
But your proposal is to make it really a green space rather than a woods.
Yes, there's quite a bit of woods on here. If the annexation of where the water tower is annexed in, and we bring that road across. Part of our request was let us run some trails through that. We have talked to the engineering department. We're fully aware where the pipes run from the water tower, so we're not going to disturb any area around the water tower. We're hoping to maybe just be able to cut one or two trails in there, which would go out to Lloydtown. That gives us the ability to take the trails from Lloydtown throughout the entire development all the way out to Tennessee Avenue and actually Red Street in one area also. But they would be heavily wooded, just cut in through there, maybe 6-foot trails, 8-foot trails, something along there. But the area in the middle is more of open space, park area, and it's centered right behind the clubhouse for the homeowner association. So that's kind of, and we were thinking, you know, picnics, 4th of July's, if the homeowner association wanted to have, you know, it will come to them at that point. We're not excited about, you know, clear cutting 2 acres right in the middle of the site, but at the same time, you know, homeowner association might like some open area in there. But with that acreage added in, I believe it's 28.6%, I don't have it exact, of total open space for the total development, which exceeds any of the limits.
Yeah, it does.
If I could ask a question, Richard, the homeowners association typically would not get established until at least 50% or more of the homes are occupied.
Correct.
Up until that time, you will have the sole voice of the homeowners association as to what's done out there.
Yes, sir.
Will it be too late at that point in time if you cut down all the trees, or are you looking at just thinning the trees until a decision is made, or how are you going to look at that?
We really haven't looked at that much detail on it yet, to be honest, Roger. We would probably lean towards thinning them out, as I stated before, and it costs money to cut down trees,
right,
and we're not really interested in doing that. But you know, we're going to work it around, you know, get some open space in there. There's a lot of woods. The whole site is woods right now, so we just feel that some of that.
We have seen in other neighborhoods where
they are now.
If you're going to keep that as a picnic area, it would be nice to at least keep a number of trees established there. So if you did have picnic tables, there would be some shade and some. I mean, you could always take the trees down later on, but not to clear cut them in the very initial part.
I agree.
So that needs to be stated?
Again, that's whatever council wants to do. If you want to say don't cut trees, just thin the trees, eventually the homeowners association will make a decision. But again, that homeowners association probably is not going to be established for several years until you, the 117 homes, that means that you'll have to have at least 55 or more occupied before you vote to establish a homeowners association.
At the time they get established, then it becomes their expense too if they want to take out more trees or whatever they want to do.
Whatever they want to do. They may decide to build a swimming pool.
So if we want to ask Richard to take out half the trees or 25% of the trees or something.
Or leave.
You mentioned thinning. What's your definition that you're using of thinning?
30% of that, no,
30%.
Not the whole area. We're just talking, I believe it's 1.75, right in that center area behind the clubhouse,
right.
1.75 acres.
So if they thin 30% of the trees, that leaves a lot of options for the homeowners association.
You can pick a number if you would like.
And again, one of the things we don't know is where these tires are. They might be right there, and you know, wherever the tires are at, your
tires are actually up on the northern side of
right.
the one corner.
I don't believe it's in this area, but
no, it's not. It's not in that area. That would kind of alleviate that problem, because they would have to be cut down to pull them out.
Actually, what I look at here is that's an amenity for your development. That's 1.3 quarter acres.
Yes, it is.
Beautiful woods. I can't imagine that you would want to cut them down until such time as the property owners association says it otherwise. Therefore, I wonder if we just say that area shall remain undisturbed until whether that use the same undisturbed buffer language, if you will, or something like that until...
Or thinning it.
The ability to thin it a little bit.
Okay. You don't know what you're getting.
Right. And all I would say on that, Mr. Smith, is... you know, we're going to build it. We're going to have to sell it.
I know.
And a lot, you know, there is 20, you know, over 20% open space area. There is a lot of area for trees, and one of the amenities besides the clubhouse may be some picnic areas, a tot lot, so on and so forth. So some of it's going to have to be, you know, thinned out in that middle area. You know, the idea is that homeowner association, it's going to be their community, so we're trying to use our experience in the past to put some amenities in there that's obviously going to help sell the community, right? Sell the community, but at the same time, like I said, you know, we're not planning on building a soccer field there, just clear cutting the thing out. We're going to use our design team, and they're going to look at it, and they're going to come up with what they think is the best idea that's obviously going to help sell the product in the community, and try to create a win-win for everybody. And that is cost-effective.
Could that then be subject to review by the planning staff or someone before it actually proceeds? In other words, a concept plan at least for that little area.
I don't know if it could. I don't know. Maybe Roger would know that. The only reason I would say that, if it's got a homeowners association and the city is going to kind of dictate what goes in that open space area, and let's say you want a bungee, I'm just using an example, but a bungee jump court or something like that, you know, now where that homeowners association is going to have the future liability of that.
But we're talking that when the homeowners association gets control, we're talking about what you're going to do.
That's fine by me.
Would you allow, I mean, I'm hearing both sides of this whole thing, and it's, I would think that the citizens that are going to be living there are going to want to have a park-like atmosphere with enough trees for canopy, so, you know, you have that urban forest in there. If you'd like to go ahead and put something in here that the developer would have the ability to thin the trees out to create a park-like area subject to approval by the planning department, so that they could go out there and they could just see what you're planning on doing and making sure that the sufficient number of trees are going to remain out there.
Yeah.
Because I think we both want the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
How you describe that is a little bit harder to put in words.
No, I understand. And in particular, behind the clubhouse area, that's going to be the main first vertical construction probably, and as it comes in, that will be the center.
I mean, obviously, you may want to have a volleyball court out there or something like that, and therefore, you don't want to have trees in the middle of your court. And, so
that could cause an issue. Yeah.
Are you going to build the clubhouse right away? Or?
Yes, that would be the first vertical construction.
Great.
The center point of, you know, you want to see something nice when you first come in. Always helps sell when you see something grand.
We're new at this planned residential, and we're just trying to err on the side of caution rather than be sorry later on.
I'm sure you won't.
What's item 13, Gary?
I'm getting there.
Gary's going to tell us what item 13 is then.
See if you like it.
Could we just skip to 14?
Well, while Gary is adding 13, I just want to add to Richard and Mr. DeCito.
DeCisto.
That we're looking forward to this being a showpiece for this town. And I know that it's taken quite a bit for us to get to this point. But I think we're at a point where all of us are better off versus where we started and where we are right now in terms of marketing this area and getting these homes sold.
We are also, we're looking forward, we're very excited about the north side area and this area in particular. We definitely feel it's up and coming. That's why we're over there.
Very good.
Am I done?
Okay, any other questions of Richard?
Thank you.
Gary is writing, wise man here.
This would be a new condition. In the area designated as open space buffers or recreation areas, the developer shall not remove more than 30% of the existing trees and shall receive the approval of the city horticulturist. prior to removing those trees to ensure that a park-like atmosphere is maintained.
Sounds good.
Is that okay with you?
Yes. Yes, that's fine.
And then if you have different plans, you just come.
Just come to us.
Yes. No, Gary, say that we've changed our minds. This is really what we'd like to do.
Did you say can we move up to 30%?
Not more than 30%.
And
he also said in the buffer areas, Roger, and I don't believe we want to be removing anything out of the buffer areas.
Anything more than 30% would require approval by the planning department?
Well, I was actually saying that whatever trees they do remove would have to be approved by the city horticulturist.
Well, that's
what I say, the planning department.
Right.
Planning department.
Well, that's addressed in the landscape plan.
Yeah. But I would say that anything more than 30% would require approval by the planning department, because there might be some areas that they might have to, you know, in some areas pathway that they're going to be building.
How would you know if they stayed with the 30% or not?
Roger?
Just thinking out loud.
When we submit documents, as the process starts moving forward, when the tree survey is submitted, you know every tree that's on the property. And when you submit your landscape plan, you know, there's requirements right in there, so you'll know what trees are allowed to be moved, which ones aren't allowed to be removed. But in his statement right there, he did say the buffer areas, and we're not touching the buffer areas.
Your concept plan designates... You designate the buffer area and the open space area, right. Recreation area. They're all designated as the same thing.
Right. Maybe we can just put the wording, the area behind, directly behind the clubhouse, that approximate 1 point.
Or the open area behind the recreation building?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That way there's no confusion that we're going to be going into these buffer areas.
Because where the detention ponds are going to be at, that'll have to be 100% clear cut.
I'm still bothered. Does anybody know exactly where the tires are buried in this plant?
Mr. Nixon has told me exactly where the tires are buried.
All 40,000?
No, he told me 2,500. But
2,500?
That'll be my issue with Mr. Nixon.
No.
That'll be.
Oh, there's a big difference between 2,500.
We know they're there. We know how to take care of them.
Okay.
You know,
are you pretty sure that's all of them? Where you know they're there? You think that's all of them that's on that whole piece of property?
Yes, they were directly in this one area. We're just. Obviously, we got conflicting reports on the number, but they're there. We'll find them.
I can tell you that during that time, those numbers weren't exaggerated. If you could see what was out there, they were there. Mayor, if I'm not out of order, I'd like to move that we adopt this ordinance on second reading with the additions of two conditions. Was it two?
Two.
Mm-hmm. I stated, do I have to read those again?
The first condition involved
the removal of the tires right.
As I previously stated on the record.
Right.
And the second condition, if I could read it one more time just to make sure we're clear, it would say, in the area designated as open space / recreation area behind the rec building, the developer shall not remove more than 30% of the existing trees without the approval of the planning department to ensure that a park-like atmosphere is maintained.
Now, what building is that?
If you look on the concept plan,
at the clubhouse or the rec,
the plan refers to it as a rec building.
It's a clubhouse, is what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's referred to Gary's name.
It shows on the plan as REC period building.
Use the term rec. That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, that's the motion. However, let's make sure no one else out there wants to speak on this subject. And if not, it's back to City Council for consideration. And
may I second the motion before you take it back?
Wait a minute. Is this gentleman? Leslie, we jumped the gun a little bit.
I'm sorry.
Again. That's all right. I don't know. Is there someone who wants to speak?
Okay, and Bob wants to speak as well. This gentleman wants to speak. So we'll hold that motion in abeyance here for a few minutes.
2 minutes? All right.
You got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Oh, I can't tell that fast.
No, I'm kidding.
My name is Ronnie West. I still 804 Tennessee Avenue, Aiken, South Carolina. I must say, when I saw this, I was really more pleased with what we saw earlier. And I think my biggest concern was there were going to be no low-income houses built in the area. You know, when I first moved to Aiken in 1986, I built a house on Tennessee Avenue. And my biggest concern was whether I'll keep my value of my home, whether it'll increase in value. And we know buying a house is a big thing, and that's where most people think their value is going to come at in the house. But in the area we're in, I'm glad that the city got oversee that, because that concerned me, because in the last few months, but 6 months, we've been somebody annexed some land on Hampton Avenue, where they could put three little small houses in the area. And, you know, my thing is, how can I keep my property value up when you put three little teeny little houses on a lot that should be big enough just for one house? But I didn't see in the plan where it said what size the lots are going to be. That it didn't say whether it could be R15 or R10. And, you know, you could say, well, we're going to put some nice housing in there, but it'd be low-income houses. You know, and we don't need low-income housing in our area. We got enough of those in our area already. And you can't attract anybody with low-income houses. You get what you ask for when you get low-income houses. If you want, I have to be honest, if you want both race in the area, you have to build nice houses. And that's what I hope that they do in this area, build nice houses and the city oversee the whole project. Thank you.
Well, yeah. Ronnie, thank you. Before you go, let's see if we can answer your question. You asked a question about, well, you made a comment. You didn't see anywhere where it said the square footage.
No,
60 by 100 is 6,000, isn't it? On the lots behind Red Street,
Roger, you gave us some numbers. 60. Here.
The lots under a planned residential zoning are not in your typical designation of 6,000 square foot lots or 8,000 or 10,000. At 117 lots, what they have here is they got some smaller lots mm-hmm. that are going to have homes. They said between 900 and 1,300 square feet, and then the larger lots about 1,200 to 1,500 square feet. I would estimate, based on what we saw, that the smaller lots would probably be more than your 7,000 to 8,000 category, and the larger lots would range between 9,000 and 10,000 square feet, or a little bit larger.
Now, do you really think that 1,100 square feet house is a growing family house?
This is exactly what we've been building, and it's cost us about $105,000, $115,000 to build those houses.
It is?
And again, these are going to have garages and carports, and the ones that we're building right now do not.
Okay.
Well, I believe Richard, you said that they're going to be $120,000 on up.
That was just my concern, because I know, I don't know whether anyone here have an 1,100 square feet house. That ain't no big house, especially if you got a wife and two kids. That's a real small house. You'll grow out of the house in no time. You know, I was hoping that they were building something like 1,500 square feet on up. But when you start saying 11, 9, and 10, you build, to me, it may cost $105,000, but it's still a low-income house. That's just the way I see it. Because I don't know how to build a house today. They say I want 1,100 square feet.
We've got two sizes here. We've got this size and this
bigger size.
I estimate in between the two sizes. As I said, 1,100 here, and I said about 1,300-1,400 square feet here.
Okay. Mr. West, let me just comment, and we have in the audience Mr. Giobbe and Mr. Reynolds, that serves on the Planning Commission. They went through a number of discussions back and forth with this request.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we started out with an RS6 category for these lots, which meant that it would have been 200 plus units on this property. And then we discussed an RS-10. I think Mr. Holland was the one that proposed, or someone proposed an RS-10, which would have given nice-sized lots, but then Mr. Holland made the comment that you can end up with a large lot, but what size will the home be on? What size will this home be on this size lot? So somehow we got into the planned residential area that would give us more control over what's built. Now that did not. What was not discussed in detail was the size of the homes, but rather the size of the lots was a concern.
Okay.
And the owner indicated that along with these homes would come a basement. I don't know whether he plans to continue to with those options, but a basement would be included with this. Is that right, Mr.?
Let's see. Why don't we ask Richard to come back? Richard, would you come back and talk about the houses, the sizes, and whether there's a basement or just what?
They're all single family.
Yes.
Yeah, they're all single family homes. We submitted some floor plans with full basements in them, and they weren't really that warm and fuzzy with some of the city staff. So we went and found, we thought, what the city liked and what they were happy with, and we did work at this in detail. So right now, Mr. Price, we're not planning on putting basements in all of these units, mm-hmm. because we have now switched to a totally different type of plan. Look and so on and so forth. Now, on the back half of the property, in the up on the hill section, the topography, there will, when we start getting into the serious engineering of the units, we may have to put full basements in some of those units.
Or half basements.
Yes, or half basements.
When they originally submit the plans, they submit them with basements. And several of you had mentioned in the past that you want the homes to look similar to the other homes in Kennedy Colony, and look like the homes in Kennedy Colony, because with a basement and the elevations of them, you have more of your ranch-style homes. And so that's when we asked them to go back and to submit some other designs that would be more appropriate with the other designs in those areas, which is what you have today.
Some of those lots are actually 11,000 square feet. The lots, with PR, which is what the ordinance is about, it provides us ability to do some different things, to put different products in, and it also, you know, we're giving up 20%. We're giving up some of our density. You know, we're fine with that. We continue to work, and we will continue with that. One thing in relationship to who is going to move in there, and it is interesting, we feel it's going to be attractive to all different sectors, including, and I believe I might have said this to you at one time, and I couldn't believe it happened, but it happened last week. I got a call from a lady, and I don't have her name with me. Later on, I'll say it to somebody when I can find the note. She's from Columbia. She was born and raised in Aiken. She's retired. She has family on the north side, and she says, I want to know about the houses. I want to know about the development. I want to come back to Aiken, and I want to move into that north side, and I want to back where my family is on that north side. And I remember, maybe it was with Mr. Evans, if you can provide a decent, a good product at a reasonable price, and a good community over there, that provides the opportunity maybe for people to move back to that area, and also maybe some people who live in the north side right now, maybe the housing stock isn't top shelf, well, maybe this is an opportunity for them to move into that community and now going to do some infill or some other things to start addressing other parts of the north side. So yes, I think there will be families moving in there, but I will not be surprised if we get a lot of calls like we got from this this woman from Columbia. She was very excited. She's like, well, my lease is up in August, are you gonna have a house ready for me? I'm like, said I'll try. excuse me. But as we said in there, some of them may be up to 1,500 square feet. What people want is what will be built.
Do the residential setbacks apply the same?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Ronnie, if I could help you with a little bit of what I understand from this and the types of homes that are going in there. If you know where George Anderson lives on Barnwell Avenue,
yeah.
And I think it's not Ori Street, but what street is it?
Marion.
Marion Street. You know where the Marion Street area is? You see the homes that are there. In fact, one of them used to be a beauty shop. I used to get my hair done in one of those old houses. They've renovated it, and they're smaller. You know, as soon as you walk into them, you're in the living room probably, and you go down a hall to other areas of the home. But I think they're a growing kind of home for retirees or young couples who want to start a home. They don't have a lot of space, but they're well built, and they're actually beautiful. I get a magazine that has South Carolina homes in it, and the award-winning home in it was a home that looks like one of these. The only difference is that it did not have a carport or a garage on the side of the home. I think it was probably in the back of the home. And so you're finding that people are building on smaller lots and smaller homes because that's what is affordable. And there is a difference between what you may call affordable homes and I think the term you used was low income. A low income house maybe is what you're thinking of in terms of a rental for someone on Section 8. I don't know what you're calling low income, but these are going to be homes that will be affordable for people on fixed income and for people who may just be starting out, or some people who just want a smaller house. Someone from Red Street just moved from Red Street because they wanted a smaller home. And so I think if you have what I have, and that's this document, you'll see pictures of houses that look like houses that are already in Aiken that are going for more than $120,000. They're selling for much more than that. So I'm hoping that that's what we're going to get over there, is a well-built, a pleasing, smaller home that's appealing to the person who does want to move back home, or a young couple who may want to just be starting out with a smaller house, who doesn't have two kids and two dogs.
Well, Ron, one of the pluses for this development is that they will either have carports or garages, and what we failed in the past with some of this development is we have built homes with no storage space, not thinking that people have lawnmowers, they have bicycles that they have, and all kinds of equipment that they need to store. And I know that in some of the homes, these folks were storing some of the stuff, their barbecue grill, in their kitchen. And so what ends up is that they start putting the stuff in the backyard, it becomes clutter, and then there goes some problems with the neighborhood, as you well know. But these areas will have your storage areas to store things in addition to the garage to do that. So.
Good, I hear what you're saying. I appreciate what you're saying. 1,100 is better. Do whatever you want to do. Small house. Yeah. And it's not for a growing family. You can put it, make anything you want, but I don't know why. I said, I want it. I'm just glad you have it for a growing family. And $100,000, $125,000 money paid for something else in the area in 2 years. And I ain't say I got a small house, but I got a 1,700 square feet. It's built too small for me and my three and a half, but
Okay, Bob, did you want to speak?
My name is Robert White. I live at 435 Orangeburg, southeast in Aiken. And my concern is the tires. The first concern I have is if the number really is 40,000 tires, if it truly is, mm-hmm. and they're in a fairly concentrated area, doesn't it surprise you that DHEC doesn't have records of this? And you know, Richard and those guys are pretty thorough, and they looked at it and said there wasn't. I think the first thing I would ask for is a clean bill of health from DHEC. 40,000 tires in a small concentrated area is one step away from Love Canal. Stop and think. They've been in there for 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And those things in the old days had all kinds of plasticizers and crap in them that went into the soil. You're not only talking about removing the tires. You're talking about what could be a huge contamination. The thing I have as a concern as a citizen is annexing any property that has any kind of cloud on the title, where the cloud involves environmental matters. And to say, well, we'll rely on DHEC, gee, if that's the same guys that lost the record, let me tell you, my first comment would be, could we afford an environmental expert to go out and take a reading of this whole thing before we go very far? And I think if we run, as a matter of policy, if we're going to start annexing property that may have a cloud, an environmental cloud on it, I don't know that I would turn the book over and say, well, I'll rely on the state and DHEC. Where are they when, in fact, you bring this property in and, in fact, somewhere downstream we find out, in fact, we have a Love Canal and you now own it or you are providing services to it? I think it would be very, very wise to put a pretty sharp due diligence crew on this. I don't think I would just... And what really troubles me is the people that are putting up the money to do the investment say, geez, you know, there's nothing of record. And you have to believe it's in their best interest to find out what's going on. So what troubles me is, A, the fact that there are people here who actually saw the tires, right? They saw them on the property. Mm-hmm. And they're there. And at best, they were buried. And if they were buried and had been buried since the late 80s till now, I'm not an expert in environmental matters. I just happen to have been involved in a lot of stuff back east where if you had a problem like that, they took your firstborn and all of your property to correct it. You simply don't get away from that kind of stuff in the north. And we should be equally as diligent here. And I wouldn't let it just go sliding by. I would put a really tough group on it and... the first thing I'd ask, if the record isn't there and the stuff that was in the paper, somebody getting a message that says you owe me $200 a day and the stuff was never handled, that's the first thing that tells you there's something going on. But more importantly, I dig into the whole thing, and if DHEC dropped the ball, they're certainly not the guys that we're turned to set the standard and say make sure these guys are in compliance or that the property's in compliance. Certainly the city has the resources to bring an expert in before we take on a piece of property like that, bring it into the city and assume whatever liability is involved with that. I think it's the real serious question here is what happened to the tires, what happened to DHEC, and if we are going to bring that property into the city and put people on it, I would want to be comfortable that they're going on to property that's safe, really safe. And I think it's a major concern to just say, well, we'll rely on DHEC reports, not the guys that lost them. I think we take a hard look at it. My comments.
It would be nice if they could look at that article and see what the dates and everything.
I start there.
Yeah, and say, look, here it is in the paper.
Yeah, you have to lose them. And by the way, we had sent a letter. Do you understand when you get those letters from DHEC, from environmental people? That's serious stuff. It's $200 a day. You can buy a pretty big piece of property with it. Just the damage. Since they issued the letter, and there seems to be no follow-up. Bothers me the whole thing.
Yeah. Robert, thank you so much. I think you raise a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
Phase 1 environmental has already been completed on the property and reviewed by DHEC.
By who in detail?
Jennifer DHEC. Hughes. Jennifer Hughes has right down in this office. We know all the regulations. We know everything about what has to do. Tires are not as toxic as this gentleman may think. The oil base in them is minimal, and it does not seep out into the soil. As you remove the tires, which DHEC will be involved with, and I don't know if the city of Aiken wants to go hire an independent third party to follow everybody around. If you want to do that, that's fine. We're fully going to meet every state requirement that's needed. You get soil tests as you go through, and the fact of the matter is, we're the one paying the bill. And I don't know what else we can do. We're meeting every requirement that's going to be needed. And the phase one has been done. It's been completed.
Richard, how was it determined that there are only 2,500, I think that's...
1,000.
25,000, excuse me.
I got that from...
Now, wait a minute, was it 25,000?
25.
I got 25.
He said 2,500 is what he said.
Well, that's what I thought you said, 2,500.
Yeah, he did.
How was that determined?
I got that from the owner.
From the owner?
Yes.
I got to ask a question. You were living there when
this
was done?
Yes,
And so was he. How big a hole was built? How big a hole was dug? I mean, really.
That was actually a kaolin pit at one time.
Hmm?
They did a test dig for a kaolin pit there at one time.
Kaolin?
Kaolin, I'm sorry.
Okay. No.
There was already a big hole there.
Right.
Right. But they had to dig deeper to push these tires in to this pit.
I'd love to see the picture, to be honest with you. And that's great. That way I can at least have it. Then I'll see them.
Well, that's a picture.
You're saying you know where the 30,000 plus tires are.
We've been back. Yes.
Richard is saying there's only 2,500.
You know what? I don't know how many's there. But I'm going to find out when we...
But someone told you
every tire that is pulled out, I've said 25 because I got that from the owner. But, of course,
okay.
Now I'm hearing
from
information. But,
okay.
You know, the owner had the property. Sure. All of this was way before we were here. We don't know what the tires. All we can do is address it and get it done. I mean, that's all we can do.
Explain to all of us the phase one environmental is. You said that's complete.
That is complete. It does, it searched all the records, state of South Carolina, for any fuel spills, any toxics, any environmental issues within a certain radius of this property. This property didn't show any. There were some other ones that showed. Then a physical visit to the site, and they searched many databases to find out if the state has recorded anything, if anybody has anything on the property. They then physically go to the site, they walk the entire site, looking at dirt, pulling things over, looking for any oil, refrigerators, Freon, any waste, any toxic dump, if it was a dump site, that's what they were looking for. We were not surprised they wouldn't see 30,000 tires because we know they were buried. We're aware that...
I'm surprised they didn't talk to some folks who knew where they were, like Leslie.
Well, the media came out. The only way for us to get a resolution to this, because we'd gone to county council, we'd come to city council, no one would say that they would own up to helping us with the problem. Until we called in all the media outlet, the local newspaper, the Augusta Chronicle, the Aiken Standard, Channel 6, 26, and 12, and Channel 10. And after all this exposure to this area, then here was a situation where no one could help us. After all this negative exposure, then they said, in 30 days, we'll have it cleared up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where Lindsay gets his research and his information.
Who said it would be cleared up in 30 days?
County council, was it?
County council.
Okay, you repeated. I'm sorry, but
don't remember all of that. Everything you repeated. What did they do in 30 days?
Solution was they turned it over. The county council turned it over to DHEC.
Okay.
DHEC gave them like 30 days.
Gave county council 30 days.
No.
Gave the owners 30 days. Okay.
dump it in.
They charge you $2 per tire when you take it off the property.
DHEC sent a letter to him and gave him 30 days to get rid of the tires. That was spokesman Ken Montgomery from DHEC. That was first. Then after that, on July 28th, they gave him 15 days because they hadn't responded. And then they said they was going to start fining them $200 a day. But with the amount, the property owners, they did confer that there was between 30,000 and 40,000 tires from Jack L. Cooper Law Office, and it's in this letter.
The property owners did agree to that?
They,
Sure, come on.
From the law office of Jack Cooper, which is one of the owners.
Okay.
He wrote this letter.
Okay.
Down at the bottom, he did estimate between 30,000 and 40,000 tires. So the owners were aware of the tires in that amount.
And he says there must be 30,000 to 40,000 tires on the property. It has rendered the property completely useless. Okay, so at that point, the owner knew that the tires were there. I mean, no question. Not only the owner, but Cooper, the law offices. Okay. So what was done after that?
After that, then they took the easy out. It was a big hole there. They went and dug it some more, pushed the tires in it, and covered it up. And they were supposed to maintain the property that the tires didn't rise or the land didn't wash away, but no one ever checked.
Okay. And you know where that is, that area.
It's in that, yeah.
You know what, you wouldn't know where that, you know where that is.
Right.
Unless he knows where that is.
It rolled up, but I got a good idea where it is.
Okay. Is that the same place that Richard thinks the 2,500 tires are? Okay, so the only difference we have then is a few thousand tires.
38.
The location is pretty well known, right?
Jeez.
Okay, the location is known.
If I could, to get a kind of a clarification on this whole thing, as I said, for the last 10 plus years I've been sitting on the state appointed committee for waste tires, and there have been sites that we've had cleaned up that had millions of tires on it. I mean, it's 25,000 is a lot of tires, but when you're talking about millions of tires on sites and tens of millions of tires been cleaned up, in 1989 there was no legislation on tire control and what should be done with tires, and they took a very loose viewpoint as to how to go ahead and get rid of it. And the main thing they were trying to do at this site here was get rid of a health concern. They really weren't concerned about any other environmental factors. Tires, to my knowledge, are not toxic. They're very inert. And in some states, North Carolina, one of them, they still allow the burial of tires, whole tires. They just don't allow that here anymore. And in 1991, state legislation was approved. It gave the means for the state to clean up these tire piles, to assist local communities and property owners in doing so. Frankly, we haven't had a tire cleanup in years in the state of South Carolina because they've all been cleaned up through the state legislation that was approved a number of years ago. I'm not too sure what the state will do as far as helping to fund to clean it up, but the state does take a very dim view of tires in this manner. I feel very assured that the state will go ahead and make sure they get cleaned up properly. Cleanup of this area will be a big benefit for everybody in the neighborhood. I don't see where the city would have any liability because it's not going to be our property. And the surety is going to be on the state's part by DHEC. I think you have the language there that says the tires would be removed in accordance with the regulations as per DHEC. In 89, the regulations were not real tight. Today, they're very tight as far as what is required.
But they don't even have a record. I mean, did you have to pay for DHEC to do this?
I'm sure.
I bet he did.
No, we had to pay for an environmentalist.
Yeah, and then they're telling you they don't have records from 1989?
I'm sure they do.
We Could I get a copy of that letter by Mr. Cooper by chance? I think I'd like a copy of that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Lindsay left the copy.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. LeDuc, you know we have interest in other environmental issues through other entities that we're involved with. We are not intimidated or afraid of what we'll find there. We look forward to it. You know, we look forward to it. These are the type of challenges we like.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate the gentleman from Orangeburg Street making his comment and his expression of concern about the health and well-being of the future residents in this area. And what none of us want is 20 years down the road someone to say, because I live there, these things happen to me based on health impact. And so if DHEC is going to go on record as saying this area is clean, and we're going on record saying that this area is clean, we feel this is clean, and do not impose any health risk to the people that will build and live there.
I think what I understand is that the condition, all 13 conditions must be met prior to the issuance of a building permit. Am I correct on that?
Actually, 12 of the conditions would have to be met within 180 days or the annexation would not take effect.
Right.
The tire issue, the tires would have to be removed in accordance with DHEC regulations prior to the issuance of the first building permit.
And the 13th condition as well, is that within the 180 days or is that...
That would be within the 180 days.
Okay, so what happens... Well,
that actually, now that you mention that, I mean, that they may want to remove trees after the 180 days.
Right, right.
So that would not fall within the 180 day requirement.
Okay. I guess my point is that the issue you raised concerns me. However, the city will not, this will not be a part of the city at all until all of these questions have been answered. So that takes away any fears I have about annexing the property and it becoming a part of the city, and then now we're responsible for all the cleanup. So that's not going to happen because we're not going to even let this annexation go forward until at such time as DHEC has certified that this property is clean. Because he's going to get the study and we're going to make sure that he complies with removing the tires. And they can build a road with them or a walkway or whatever they want to do with them, but the tires will no longer be there. And if in 89 they made tires with toxic materials, then DHEC certainly will need to let us know that, and then we just need to follow through to make sure that DHEC does what it's supposed to do, and I think we can do that effectively. I feel certain we can do that without hiring someone to do that for us. But that's my understanding, is that this will not be our problem if we approve this tonight. It will not even be in effect until it's such time as you have done what you've said you're going to do.
This is correct. I do need to get a clarification because, Roger, I think you might be a little more in tune. It says annexation is null and void if these things aren't done in 180 days.
Correct.
Funding, environmental testing, you find the actual, like I said, we will not even touch the dirt. It could be for 60 days.
The tire removal is not subject to the 180 day requirement.
Right.
And
okay, well, as I'm looking at this, it says the annexation will be null and void if all of these. I wouldn't have to go through the whole planning process.
The two additional conditions that were placed tonight
are not part of that 180-day process.
Okay.
Only those conditions that you currently see here, the two conditions that were placed on you tonight, would have to be completed prior to the first issuance of the building permit. Because again, what we're concerned about is that before you start building and people start getting ready to move out there, that everything's cleaned up and taken care of.
Okay, then I would have to ask, if you're picking particular items, each dwelling will have a carport or garage.
Right.
I even have a building permit.
You're going to assure within 180 days.
Right. Well, yeah,
we'll be signing a form.
Hopefully, we'll submit drawings by that time, full set of drawings for review in the building department, so we would know that every unit has in there. That's a little aggressive, but.
Well, maybe. Again, when you submit for your building permit, it's just going to show it's got a carport or a garage on it.
And the other one is the fence on the north side. Let me find it. I apologize.
That's the top.
A privacy fence along the northern boundary parallel to Pulp Hook.
Yeah, Richard, you're obligating that you will have these things done.
That I will have them done.
And same thing like when we just completed one with Woodside, they sent in an agreement obligating themselves to complete these items and abide by them.
Okay. We'll convert this into a binding development agreement.
Right. Between
it's much easier.
You and your attorney and our attorney here.
That's all I need. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any more comments by anyone? We're still in the public hearing phase.
My name is Suzanne Haslip. I live in the city of Aiken. I'm actually here as a member of the Open Space Committee to support you hiring a consultant, but I was encouraged to come early, and I'm glad I did. I'm surprised with all the discussion about tires or no tires or how many there are that the applicant wasn't requested to do a Phase 2 environmental study. A Phase 1 is extremely cursory investigation of the property. It's very non-invasive as far as checking the soil. I'm a little concerned to put it in the hands of DHEC. I think they're getting really busy down there. I know that I could usually go and order a perk test and get it done within a couple days. I sell a lot of property out in the country. Now it's at least 2-3 weeks before, you know, they can get out there and test. That is my only concern, that with all the consternation and all the differing opinions on the tire issue, why wasn't he encouraged to do a Phase 2? And also, how is DHEC going to identify where exactly these tires are if nobody seems to know where they are? That is a concern of mine. And I just want to say that.
Susan, I think we've had people say they know where the tires are. Now, the question you would have is, well, how do you know they're not tires other places?
Absolutely.
And I don't know that may be.
I'm just surprised that part of his due diligence was not doing a Phase 2.
Well, let's talk about the Phase 2 then. Richard?
I'm not an expert in it, but a Phase 1 is an extremely cursory investigation.
That's right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, good point. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Richard, how about a Phase 2?
That's not up to us. We've never required things.
In any normal development process, you know, we spend quite a bit of money going through the process. As of right now, we still don't even know if we can build on that site, as in we don't know what we're approved for, what we can do. We also haven't purchased the property yet.
Right.
So we have laid out Phase 2. When does that happen? When we know what we can build there. We know we're moving forward, and then we're making our next investment.
You have that plan, then. You have that schedule to...
It's all scheduled out.
To do that.
Yes.
No, that's not true.
It's not true?
No, it's not going to be the space. Sisto, bring that home. The only time a Phase 2 is ordered is if the engineer, the environmentalist doing the Phase 1 recommends that a Phase 2 is necessary. We had a qualified environmental did the phase one. They said there was absolutely no reason for a phase two. Had they said, you need a phase two, we would have gone forward and had a phase two done. And obviously, they're in business, and their revenue is derived from all the business they can generate. So if there were any concerns regarding those tires, they would have recommended a phase two, and they did not. So my answer no was, we have no plans to do a phase two at this point.
Ralph, is it my understanding that maybe they said that because they searched the records and didn't find
a certain document? No, they physically went to the property and they did testing on the property because of the tire situation, and it's in
okay.
Phase.
Well, what type of testing do they do?
That I can't answer.
Do we have a letter?
You should have a copy of that phase one.
Okay.
I know we submitted it.
But they do some kind of probing to find out if they're hitting certain things, objects, materials, or.
And they're obviously very familiar with used tire situation and very tight.
But they did that all over the property?
Yes.
I mean.
Yes. It was an extensive and an expensive phase one. And like I said, they, believe me, the environmental companies, they look for an excuse to tell you really need. So I feel very comfortable.
Right.
And as far as the removal of the tires, you know, we've been talking to DHEC since the very beginning. And these tires will be removed and disposed of under their standards. Absolutely.
Will they have some type of guarantee when they finish that all the tires that could possibly be on that property have been removed?
Well, I think so, because obviously, because of the maturity of the trees that are on most of the property, it's a safe assumption that there aren't tires buried there. You're not going to have a 20, 30, 40 foot pine that's grown since 1989. So I think that confinement to the open areas, I think that's pretty good. I think we can be satisfied that that's where the tires, only place they could have been. And once they're removed, they're gone. And I agree with Roger. You know, I think the best thing that could have happened to this situation is to have somebody like us come along and step up to the table and say, well, we're going to develop the ground and deal with this problem that's existed for a number of years. And it sounds like, and I agree with the gentleman that got up and spoke, somebody, you know, in DHEC dropped the ball on this, it sounds like. And I think that they should have been removed back then in 89 instead of DHEC allowing them to bury them. But, you know, that was not my control or anybody here. Mm-hmm. So this is the situation that exists today, and the fact that there is going to be a cleanup, I think everybody, you know, I think everybody should be happy with that.
Well, I think so, too. I think the concern is, are we getting it all, you know?
I mean, do you agree with me on the truck situation?
Well, I, you know, what little I know about it.
Well, it's pretty, you know, the trees are pretty thick. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And
I don't see how a tree can grow through all those tires, if that's right. what the point. Yeah.
You know, haven't happened in 14 years.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Now, on the phase one again with DHEC now, they determined also that there were tires there.
DHEC went through the phase one. DHEC has no record of it. Whoever was working at DHEC in 89 doesn't work there anymore.
Okay, I'm really getting confused because I thought phase one.
That was not done by DHEC.
That's a private environmental company.
Oh, okay.
As a matter of practice, in our due diligence, we always have a phase one done.
Okay.
They turn around and recommend you do a phase two, then we absolutely do a phase two.
All right, and their results then, phase one said what?
That there was no need for a phase two, And I, you don't have a copy of the
paper? Did it say essentially there were no tires there?
No. They said they actually acknowledged the fact that there were buried tires.
Oh, okay.
But said that they were not a problem as far as contamination.
Okay. Okay, so now we're going to a step, another step here by adding another condition saying that the tires, all the tires will be removed in accordance with DHEC regulations.
Mm-hmm.
We've added that tonight.
Right.
So, Mr. Attorney, do you think that covers us?
I hate to assume what DHEC would do, but I would assume that if they're going to get DHEC involved in helping them remove the tires, I would have to assume that DHEC is going to do some kind of a study where they figure out whether they've got all the tires or not.
Do we need to add any more words to this?
I don't think we do.
How about EPA? Aren't they a little stronger?
Well,
I don't know.
DHEC operates under EPA's regulations, I believe.
We have a copy of your study? Do we? Do we?
I don't know. Well, I don't believe we do, but we have never asked for an environmental study on any property that we annexed before.
But we've never known of an environmental problem like this on any property that we've annexed before since I've been here. If he's paid for
it. Well, it kind of gets down to me. Do we think we're covered by the item we added? And if not, do we need to add some other wording here that does even a more...
do we need to add that
it's better job?
Prison fund testing, soil testing? Would DHEC do the soil testing?
No, they would not.
So it had to be an independent person who did the soil testing.
I don't have that with me. And it was turned over to DHEC because that's who, the jurisdiction it falls under, that's who we turned it over to. We can give a copy, but who's your environmentalist?
But then she gave you something in writing, right?
She went through the entire thing. She goes, she was alarmed that it wasn't recorded anywhere by DHEC in the state. And she said, I'm going to record it, and I want to work hand-in-hand with you. And I said, I expect you to work hand-in-hand with me. She goes, just when you're ready to start, let's move forward.
And then the idea is, as you do the removal, there will be continuing inspections?
Every tire that comes out has to be recorded. And where it's sent, recycled.
Is that your
governing?
Yes, right. We do that, but obviously DHEC has to monitor that. But we don't get a very clean bill of health.
Absolutely. And return inspector, we miss something.
Okay. All right. I think we've had a good dialogue here, a lot of information. Is there anyone else that needs to share their thoughts?
Good gentleman.
Okay.
The engineer.
I'm Jack Beckham, 188 Governor's Lane. And I think these guys should be given a certificate of merit to even come in here to go through all this. As a developer, I think we've got people in the specialists in the environmental, specialists in engineering. I don't know why they would have to come before this City Council. Every time I come to City Council, I ask myself, what happened to our government? To me, it's, these guys coming in here, if they're taking a piece of land that probably producing no taxes at this time, pretty much useless, they come in and want to spend millions of dollars and they're going to take all the risk. I mean, if it's tires buried out there, this city council won't be responsible for it. It's pretty obvious. Why would they have to go through this? I just don't think if we keep treating contractors like this, you're not going to have a whole lot of contractors come in here. And one day we'll have all these smart growth people that don't want to do anything sitting here. with no tax.
Do you not think that city council has a responsibility to Mr. Williams?
I don't think the city council should have
Mr. West
could oversee every detail. That's what we have engineers for. That's what we have environmentalists for. That's what we have DHECs for. Why do people have to keep going over that over and over and wasting time? It's beyond me. And this new planned residential, if that's the kind of control you're going to have, you can just, for scratching that last sentence, you should scratch it all, because not many developers are going to put up with that. We go through the trouble of hiring engineers who know what they're doing. I'm not trying to downgrade you, but your people are basically just people. You're not engineers. You're not mechanical. You don't know electrical. You don't know anything basically about building. And you hear questioning every little detail. To me, that is ridiculous. That's what we hire engineers for. When you turn in a concept plan, all you should have to do is approve the concept plan. You don't need to question every detail. How many parking spaces do they have? That is absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I disagree with you entirely. I honestly feel that it's not an engineer or a builder, but I am elected to represent the tax-paying citizens of this community.
Well, this is not
wants some
taxes.
Say about this, what happens in their community, and they do want it. They absolutely do want it, and I know it's a problem. It's a headache. It's a headache for everybody. But we're just trying to do the best we can for our citizens and create the kind of developments that'll make money for everybody.
Well, if we had somebody here with a heart attack, and we've called in somebody to take care of them, we were certain to bring in some specialists and take their word. We wouldn't have people just sitting up here telling the doctors how to operate, would they? When you have a contractor, you should give him some credit that he knows what he's doing, basically, or he wouldn't be investing millions of dollars. Y'all assume the guy's an idiot, but he's going to invest $10 million. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Jeff, I think we need to cut this off. Nobody's saying anybody's an idiot. I'm not a expert on tires. I am a graduate electrical engineer years back. I know how to fix a light switch now. But we're doing our best for our citizens of the city. And I'm sorry you don't appreciate that. You're really generalizing on how much time we take with developers and all this stuff, and they're not going to come back. We haven't had an issue like this with 30, 40,000 tires. This is a concern, partly because we don't have maybe the necessary education in it. We've learned a lot. I think we're ready to move on now. But
why would you be concerned about tires when you don't have any liability? Why would you be concerned? They're the ones you have to worry about.
I think that we've added a condition here that would cover that, and we've been talking back and forth about whether we really feel like the wording and all that covers that. And I personally think it does now. I'm ready to move on and approve this.
I agree with you.
Let me just add, you asked the question, why should we be concerned when we have no liability?
No, I didn't say that. I said, why should you be so concerned about the tires when
we have no liability? If we approve something knowing or having doubt that it produced some hazard that would impose health concerns to the public, that is irresponsible.
I think everybody pretty well knows that tire is out there. I mean, I don't think they can come back and say the city council approved the subdivision out there knowing and made like there were no tires there or I covered it up. I mean, everybody in the paper, you've got proof that in the paper where you got 30,000 tires sitting out there. I mean, they didn't vanish. You know?
Right.
I mean, I'd be afraid to tackle that job. But you got to give these guys credit.
I think we do. We give them credit. We appreciate the hard work they've done, the fact that they want to put in this development there. We all know the land's been a long time, and nothing's
been accomplished on it. Now we have an opportunity to have a nice development, and I appreciate it. I think we all appreciate it. Is anyone else now? Okay, we're back to City Council for consideration. Leslie, you had a motion some time ago. If you remember it.
That motion still stands, but I'm not sure.
Mr. Mayor, my recollection was the motion involved the addition of two new conditions, the one dealing with the removal of the tires in accordance with DHEC regulations prior to the issuance of any building permit. The other condition was the addition of the language dealing with the developer would not remove more than 30% of the existing trees without the approval of the planning department.
Yeah. Behind the recreation or the clubhouse, whatever.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is that your mission?
My motion. What I want to be sure of is that we would have records indicating that this property is suitable to build on. It imposes no health threat to the public. And with DHEC giving us that information, does that tell us that, Mr. Lawyer, Mr. Smith?
I apologize. I don't know the DHEC regulations. I have to assume that there's a DHEC regulation that says you can't build a house on property that's contaminated.
Okay.
I'm assuming that. I don't know that for a fact.
Well, at any rate, we're saying in accordance with DHEC.
I mean, certainly if they go to clean up the property, the DHEC regulations are going to require them to clean the property up in such a way that once they're through, the property is suitable to be built on.
Okay, that's your motion. Do we have a second?
Second, Mr. Mayor.
We have a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passing. That's it. Okay, passage unanimously. Very good. We want to thank everyone for their comments and their considerations and their wonderful thoughts.
Jeff, we're going to talk about Spirit Court someday.
Item 3, moving on to item 3, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance concerning planned residential development. So, Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending paragraph 2.3.1 of the zoning ordinance regarding planned residential development, PR district. Council approved about a month ago that any new annexation or rezoning over 4 acres for residential or 5 acres for commercial would come to you under the PR or PC zone. By doing this, we've looked under the current zoning ordinance, and there seems to be a statement that's in conflict to what council wants, or actually not wants, but has already approved. The statement says the PR zone should only be used if the proposed project cannot be developed under another zoning category, and if the goal is to develop a project of a higher quality than would be likely to occur in another zone. Well, now you're saying that you would like to see everything come to you as PR over that certain acreage. So this language, if you approve it tonight, would be removed from the zoning ordinance to better reflect council's thought process on new annexations and rezonings. You did approve this on first reading at the last meeting. This is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend section 2.3.1 of the zoning ordinance concerning language, which is in contradiction with the new PR and PC policy.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. If there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this, you certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve this amendment to the zoning ordinance on second reading.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
We have a second. Any discussion by council? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, it passes unanimously. On the new business, first reading of an ordinance to annex property at USC Aiken campus. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken, consisting of 16.83 acres of land, more or less owned by Aiken County Commission for Higher Education, and to zone the same residential multifamily low density. This is to provide new dormitories or apartments on the campus, similar to the ones that were just completed a couple of years ago. The Planning Commission did have a few conditions. However, I did not include those in here. You'll find in the ordinance, because condition one was already complied, and therefore the other conditions weren't really necessary. So for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance to annex 16.83 acres under the RML zone at the University of South Carolina Aiken campus. And upon your consideration, a second reading and public hearing will be held the next meeting.
Okay, sir. Very good. Thank you. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve this ordinance on first reading.
Okay.
I'll second.
And we have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. That will be a nice addition. Mm-hmm. Item 2 is the first reading of an ordinance for rezoning property at 307 Charleston Street. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending the zoning of real estate owned by Legacy Design, LLC, from general business, GB, to residential single-family, RS8. A similar piece of property was rezoned just shortly ago. And what they want to do is to put up a single-family home. This is exactly what council approved when they looked at the Old Aiken Master Plan. And the only situation we have here is that under the RS8 zone, it requires a 70-foot minimum front lot distance, and this is 60 feet, a little under 60 feet. However, as long as it could meet the required setbacks from the property line to where the house is going to be at, an existing lot can have a building such as this constructed on it. So for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance to rezone property at 307 Charleston Street, southeast, from general business to RS8, and upon your consideration, a second reading and public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under petitions and requests, we have two requests for a consultant for open space plan. The open space plan, Mr. LaDuke.
Yes, sir. At our last meeting, we had a presentation by the open space green space committee headed up by Bill Reynolds. They had discussed with council the various criteria that was going to be used to rate each particular piece of land that we'd be looking at in the future. One of the recommendations they had was to start looking in and around the city, those areas that are in our comprehensive plan area and those that are just outside of it, to start identifying general areas as to their suitability based on this criteria, whether or not the city might want to purchase those areas for green space, or to go ahead and get the conservation easements, or to have the property given to the city under some means. There also seemed to be some discussion on what was considered open space by council. Some of you saw the need for open space to be areas that would have connectivity, to be larger areas, of several 10, if not hundreds of acres surrounding the city, and possibly even some areas within the city. Some of you also thought, though, of it being more like a neighborhood park or a particular smaller plat within neighborhoods. Those particular areas are the ones that I look towards the Neighborhood Association, Glenn Parker as Director of Parks and Recreation, to identify for the city to possibly purchase for those neighborhood or pocket parks. the area that we had asked this task force to look at was for those larger areas of property. In discussing this with Mr. Reynolds and then later with Dacre Stoker, we would like to suggest a couple different things here. Number one, that we hire this consultant to do this work. But number two, that we bring in someone who is very knowledgeable about green space and open space to talk to City Council, and I would suggest also the County Council, because a number of these projects, we'd be partnering with the county on obtaining them, similar to what we did when we discussed the character and design of the downtown area, when we brought in the professor from North Carolina. We had a luncheon with her, and then she gave a general discussion or general session to the public at large. We think this is such an important subject that we would like to invite someone down, have a small group that we could hear from her or him to talk about open space and green space, the importance of it, what we're trying to achieve, what other communities have achieved, let you ask some questions, and then hold a couple of general sessions or workshops during the afternoon, and then in the evening around 5 o'clock have just a larger session at the theater where they could present to the general public some ideas on open space and green space. Dacre felt that we could pull all this together probably sometime in January and have that speaker come down and talk to us. So that's one thing. The other thing, though, is the committee still feels strongly that we should go ahead and hire this consultant to begin the work to start identifying those general areas and to map those for us to help us to better determine the open space, green space areas. I know Mr. Reynolds is here. Some of his committee members are here. If you'd like to hear further about the consultant that we're recommending.
Well, do you have anything to add that you'd like to add to what Roger said?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we'll see if we have any questions. Does council have any questions? I think, you know, we've gone so far, it's important. We all recognize that. We've agreed to it. And to stop without going the next step that's really going to get some production going would be rather silly. So I know I'm in favor of a consultant.
Well, how is this going to be different from the study we had done about 5 years ago?
You know, we were just talking about environmental phase ones, phase twos. Each one is a different level or in-depthness of study of these areas. What we had done was just a preliminary discussion and a report talking about the importance of open space, green space, and giving us some general ideas and certain criteria. Now, the Palmetto Conservation Foundation, is that the name of the group, has developed some generalized maps showing potential open space areas. What Bill's committee did was they have set up a criteria, a rating system, so that as we get pieces of property that we're interested in, we could actually give you a tool or rating on each one that we could do ourselves in-house and to say, add up. And I know some people wondered about the scale of 135 points, but you know, if it's certainly only 50 points, that's not going to rate nearly as well as far as our concern about buying it versus one that rates at 120 points. So that's the tool that you will be using as I bring you property in the future. We have that $1 million and say, we're recommending that you consider buying or getting a conservation easement on this 100 acres. It has a rating of out of 135 of 80, which is a certain percentage. The consultants will actually go out there and start looking at areas and properties and evaluating them as to the habitat and the watershed area, looking at different plant material that could be there, looking at possible historic areas, looking at the connectivity. How close is it to the city? Can it be used for any recreational purposes? In most cases, we'd be considering more of a walking trail. What about the price that they're talking of, or versus maybe we get a conservation easement on it? Or maybe they'd be donating it to us, and we'd be doing the paying for the attorney fees and the surveys of the property. So they would be looking at each individual area, not each individual parcel, but an area, and saying these are areas that you should concentrate on and give us more direction as to where we need to go.
Can they? Are they going to use the study then that we paid for before, so we don't repeat everything?
Yes. In fact, we one of the folks that we'll be talking to would be the Pell Mill Conservation Foundation, and they said that they could do it. We also want to talk to some other ones. We could certainly use the base mapping that they have developed to put this overlay onto.
I just don't want to pay for the same study twice, is I guess what I'm worried about. What about, I really am concerned about not addressing the issue of small areas within the city limits already. I really am. I've lived in my house since 1974, and other than the Westcliff Park at the top of the hill with the tennis courts, the Parks and Recreation Department hasn't suggested any green space that I can think of since that time in that area.
Yeah,
so I don't see that happening, you know, and yet I've seen areas that would really be great to have saved as green space, not necessarily playground.
And part of that's, you know, again, they're looking at more recreational type areas.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
This is the first time that we as a city have ever looked at passive type areas.
And that's really what I'm thinking of, is a more passive type area, but not 100 acres, maybe only an acre, maybe only half an acre in some neighborhoods that would be.
You know, and that's a decision council have to look at. Do they want to go ahead and buy more residential lot type sizes versus larger areas? Of course, in the Kelmia area where you're describing, there is the park, but then we have a 2,000 acre woods right along that entire area.
I wonder if, Jane, I wonder if you would agree that this is something that we could talk about at Horizons.
That would be fine with me. I just don't want to, I don't want that to go away. Just because I can think of one lot right now in particular that, if it is developed intensely, will really ruin several homes, several private homes. And that's the kind of thing that I worry about. I don't know. I just would hate for this open space committee to only look at great big pieces of land. And I don't mind waiting until Horizons to talk about it. But
also, we'll have the opportunity before that time to have that person come down and to present this forum and a couple of workshops on open space and green space and what other communities have done.
Well, plus, and when I asked that question last time about whether the city owned any parcels within the city limits right now, and you said no, and, you know, there really wasn't anything. But I'm wondering if the county does. A county official told me they thought that there were several parcels that were publicly owned.
Well, we can gather that information, too.
I mean, now, we do own property outside the city.
I mean in the city.
Might own property in the city.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't.
The county might own property inside the city?
That's what I was told.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe I'm...
That's something we can investigate and get that information.
If there isn't there, that's fine. I don't know for sure, but I'd like to know.
Okay, are we ready to move on this?
And do any of you have a problem with us trying to put together some kind of a bring down some expert type person to have a forum to give us a little bit more education on that? I know I certainly could use it.
I just need to check dates, making sure most folks can be there that would like to be there, not just council, but the other organizations as well.
And like the last time when we had the person talk about the downtown design and character, we, if I recall correctly, we had the Planning Commission, Design Review Committee, some staff, and City Council attended a luncheon. And we'll try to do the same thing with an appropriate committee.
Okay. How are you going to go about determining who you will fill this position if it's approved?
We will go ahead and ask for proposals from several different consultants. We'll get a committee of generally 3 to 5 individuals to sit down and listen to their proposals and then select one. I know we have some staff people who are very concerned, and I'm sure there's a couple of people from the task force that would be willing to sit down and hear those proposals too.
Okay. Very good. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we've got a second as well. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Yes, it's unanimous. Okay. December meeting schedule.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
One place. I was thinking about the items that you're adding to your horizon. I was making a list here. Typically in December, we only have one council meeting. We generally cancel the second one because of the holidays. In this particular case, we could have one on the 4th Monday. It is December 25th. I'll have to get permission from my family to come. But you could also take the option of canceling the second meeting in December and enjoying Christmas. So we're recommending you probably consider canceling it.
I so move.
I second.
Okay. All right.
Why?
Any discussion?
Why?
Discuss it then.
Bah humbug.
All in favor of canceling the meeting? Show of hands. Okay. Passes unanimously. Council needs to consider going into executive session. And the subject would be the city manager's review, performance review, and potential salary increase.
Mr. Mayor, I move we go into executive session.
Second.
Okay. All in favor? Okay. Looks like it's unanimous. Everybody was here. So we'll adjourn to the executive session.
Hope to see you at the next meeting.
Yeah, it's not real clear yet.
Okay. I'll call the city council meeting back in session after our executive session, which we just completed. And in that session, Don made a motion to come out of that session, and Beverly seconded that, and it was unanimous to come out of executive session. Subject of the executive session was to discuss the city manager's review, personnel review, and potential salary increase. We had a lively discussion. It was all good. Some of the things that were mentioned by various council members, just repeat them, and if they want to expand, that's fine, is that Roger is a man of character. He's very responsive to phone calls, both of council and citizens. He does what he says he'll do. When he tells you something, he'll do it. You don't have to worry about him, the issue anymore. He's a visionary. He looks ahead. While many people just look at what's happening tomorrow, he looks 5-10 years ahead to see what we can do and improve our community. He's a very patient person. He can work with anyone. He works well with others. That goes along with being very patient, too. He's a bridge builder. That goes along with working with all types of folks. He tries for win-win situations and building bridges between peoples as citizens. And also a major improvement we've seen over the last several years is the bridge building that's taken place between the city and the county councils. And that is working very well now, and it needs to because we've got so many projects in common. And he's a very fair person. And when he talks to council members or others on an issue, he will ultimately present both sides of the issue, you know, to be fair, that both sides are being heard, being told, and then a decision can be made, a fair decision can be made. So those are some of the comments that were made. Also that he is an excellent city manager, and we're very fortunate to have him as our city manager in our city.
And if council members, before we have a motion on salary, if council members have anything they want to add to that, I've tried to pick up on most of the comments that I heard, but if I missed anything or if someone wants to add anything else, please do that. If not, would someone like to make a motion concerning salary? Obviously, we discussed it. We could not vote on it. We did not vote on it in executive session, and that's why we're here now in open session to do that. So is there a motion?
I'd be happy to make motion to offer the city manager a 3% meritorious increase.
I'll second that.
Okay. Dick made the motion. Don seconded. Are there any comments concerning that?
Well, I just want to point out, as we all know, that this still barely brings him up to the average paid city managers from cities of comparable size, even though there's nothing average about the job you do.
That's exactly right.
Just want to tell Roger you're worth a lot more.
Right.
And there's no doubt about that, either of those comments. We're concerned about the overall salary increases for employees as well, you know. And I think as a council, we have to take that into consideration, obviously. Even though we're talking about some single person, we've got to look and see what the effect is to the other employees. And So 3%, we had in mind, Roger, you know, discussed, well, maybe a 2%. We went higher than that, and we're pleased to do it, and wish it could be more at this time, certainly. So we have a motion and second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. So, Roger, thank you for your good work, and welcome for another year, at least.
Let me just thank you. I think Beverly mentioned, you know, like, of my Christian character, and I'd just like to say that, I think it was Jane that also mentioned about, you know, sometimes she wonders why I even come back every day. It takes a lot of grace. You know, I really feel like God's given me a lot of grace with this job, and that He has really blessed myself and my family. And when things do get difficult, it is very comforting on my part to know that I'm not in control. You know, that God's in control and that things are going to work out. And with that faith that I have, He has given myself or someone else or one of you the direction we need to go. And He has allowed us to go in that to get those things completed. So I just really thank you for your confidence in me, and I'll continue to do the best that I can always can do.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you.
Yes. Do we need to close the meeting? And
if you want to, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
No, maybe not.
Oh, okay. Don Sprawls has an item to bring up.
I'll make this brief. I didn't have time to talk to Roger about this either. We have a sergeant on the fire department whose son is real ill. He's got 5 cancerous tumors in his stomach. They're going to have to go to Texas for a special surgery, and they're going to be, parents are going to have to, it's Alan Turner and his wife, Sergeant Turner.
Oh, no.
And it's going to take them about 6 weeks, so they're going to have to go down there and be with him. Of course, insurance is going to pay, you know, for the surgery. I didn't get this printed till 6:10. I've been trying to get it emailed to me all day, so I don't know all the details. But the guys in the fire department want to put on a benefit for Alan to help defray the expenses. And they want to use the city municipal center. I don't know what it is, if it's a barbecue or a concert or whatever. But they've asked me if we could waive the fee one time. Being a city employee, this is one of our people, you know, just the rental fee for the city hall or the municipal building. And so they can schedule, you know, whatever they want to do, which I don't know what they want to do yet. We just use the facility one night.
Right, right. So, well, this is so sad.
I'm just here to ask council if they could waive that fee.
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to try to say this without missing up, but you know, when my son was 13 and we had to go out of town for surgery, it meant all the difference in the world to us, the anonymous help that we got from the citizens of Aiken. And I've always been eternally grateful for that, because we had to go to Florida just almost unexpectedly, and I stayed 3 weeks. William stayed 1 week, but I stayed 3 weeks. And I mean, from Butler Derrick ordering the Air Force to fly him back, to LaWanna McKenzie making the arrangements for the rescue squad from the county of Aiken to come down to Florida and pick him up, because he could not ride in a car or a van. He had to be in a bed coming back home. And I just think it means a lot to the parents to know that you're willing to give when it's a child, because financially it's not so much that you need the money, but you just kind of need to know that you got the support. I think that's the signal that we need to send, because it kind of helps you make it when you got to go with your child like that. And I think we need to do it. I know we normally don't do it, but I think this is one of those cases where when I look at this picture,